Hi, everybody. It's episode 330 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It's Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. I am Chris. With me is Walnut. Sorry, I forgot you there.
I'm here. I thought either you forgot my name or you thought we were recording. Or you just forgot.
So I noticed my my volume was a little low, so I went to adjust it as I was saying things, and
Just loud for a lot of that right there. I'm sorry. For some reason, my Audacity keeps starting me at, like, 0.20 instead of 0.1, 0.01.
Yeah, that's so good.
If I blew out anybody's ears, I'm sorry.
I'll try and fix it when I get your audio.
I just lowered it to 0.1, so hopefully it doesn't mess you up.
Okay, that works. It's Wednesday. It's a new year.
Yeah, it's a new day. It's a new year. It's quite a day. We're recording on Wednesday, the 6th of January. So Americans, you know what's going on today.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an afternoon.
Yeah,
I don't even know. I mean, we were talking about it beforehand, so I'm not sure if we really have much else to really say about it.
We're not a political show. We don't really have much to say on it because we're not a political show. But the main takeaway of what we discussed is we're all for supporting your right to protest, but that wasn't a protest.
Nope. It was terrorism. Domestic terrorism.
Yes, exactly. We could go further into it, but that is way above our pay grades.
Yeah, I just don't know that much about politics.
Yeah, because I'm on a show that records every 3 weeks called Bros A, where we talk about this stuff quite frequently. We are a comedy show, but we do get some heavy hitting topics. I have been picking up a lot of this stuff and learning a lot of this stuff over the course of the past few years that, like, I'm a little bit more embroiled in it than you may think, I guess.
Yeah, like, I know what's going on and, like, I understand it and all. I'm just not, like, I'm not a political science major.
Yeah.
So, like, I only know what the news tells me.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of where we all are. Like, I could do a little bit of research to understand more, but we all are, like, where the news is at, and you have to be watching the right news. Like, you can't watch InfoWars, you can't watch Fox News, you can't watch certain other news that lean more to the left or to the right. I tend to watch ABC, which is surprisingly very much middle ground than anything else, at least in the United States.
I tend to watch MSNBC, which is very, like, left-leaning, I don't know. They seem a little more just... They seem to give less fucks about what they say.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody's being a complete asshole, they seem to be happy to call them out on it.
Yeah. Which is, it's what's needed in the news.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
But anyway, we've got a show and a website and stuff to talk about.
Well, we're gonna start with something absolutely ridiculous. Walmart has something new up for pre-order.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
You can pre-order Dorito 3D at Walmart.
Fuck yes.
I hate it.
I want it. I want to do it.
Those things were disgusting to begin with. I hated those things when they were originally out 20 years.
I enjoyed them, but, like, they are kind of cheap because, like, they're air-filled, and so you don't get a lot. So, like, you get the... Like, I understand not liking them, but also at the same time, they're Doritos 3D. Come on now.
No, like, they're disgusting.
They're great, man.
No, they are disgusting. You were too young when they were originally out.
I'm only 2 years younger than you.
Yep, you were too young. You were a child.
But you can pre-order them. Do you have to go in stores, or can you just?
It looks like you can do it online.
Awesome. I probably won't do it. I'm not going to waste my money on something like that. I just started a diet. I don't want to get Doritos.
They're only $2.98 a bag. If you order 12 bags, you get free shipping. They are chili cheese nacho and spicy ranch flavored. I believe they are 6 ounce bags.
You know?
Yep, ounce bags.
I might pre-order them and then sell them for $1,500 on Facebook Marketplace.
If you do pre-order them, they should ship on January 26th.
Okay.
So, yeah. If anyone wants these disgusting things, you can pre-order them at Walmart.
I mean, I kind of want to.
Of course you do. Of course you do. But yeah, so there's that. But actually in something a little more interesting, DC Comics just did sort of a new reboot again.
Okay.
So their kind of big overarching thing, Dark Knight's Death Metal, just wrapped up this week. And without, like, just spoiling it, because it literally came out yesterday, at least in the wording of it, they undid all of the crises that have happened.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, you know from, like, the CW shows, like, crises are a thing that DC does whenever they feel like they need to kind of update their continuity.
It's their seasonal crossover.
I mean, in some senses, yes. So, like, the original Crisis was Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
That was the one that brought everything down to a single universe.
Yeah.
So, rather than having, you know, Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3, Earth 4, it was just Earth. And it retconned a lot of characters, too. So, like, the more campy Batman from, like, the 60s and earlier kind of didn't exist anymore. He just became sort of the Batman that we know today.
What was the crisis for the New 52?
That was just called the New 52.
So there wasn't, like, a crisis to cause that? It was just...
So that Flashpoint is technically what caused it.
Okay.
So kind of like in the show, the Flash went into... I actually forgot something else that also caused it. But kind of like in the show, like when Flash went into like that alternate world where he saved his mom.
Yeah.
When he came back, there were things that changed.
I didn't realize that Flashpoint was that new of a storyline.
Yeah, 2011.
I did not know. I like, for some reason, I felt like Flashpoint is like, because it's so like well regarded in like those storylines. Like, I thought it was something that either A, had happened multiple times, because that's what comics do. Or B, had happened not much earlier, but like maybe the 80s. Like,
nope.
I didn't realize that Flashpoint was 2011.
Yeah, so Flashpoint led into the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
What we just found out like last year with the Doomsday Clock series,
yeah,
was Dr. Manhattan was actually kind of the hand ultimately behind that change.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, the Flashpoint is the in-universe thing that happened basically between it. So, like, the Flash went from his universe to the Flashpoint universe to the New 52 universe.
Yeah.
When he came back to the New 52 universe, he kind of just knew that everything was the way it was.
Okay.
Like, nothing about that seemed weird to him. But then we found out, like, in the last couple of years, ever since they started doing Rebirth, which was in 2016, if I remember, they had been hinting at, like, there was actually a larger force at work that actually caused the timeline. Because what the New 52, aside from rebooting things, basically took years out of the timeline.
Yeah.
Like, it made a lot of the characters younger. It condensed some of their, like, their career history, basically.
Yeah, like, I watched the Flashpoint movie, and then following right after that is, I think, Justice League Doomsday. Like, they fight Doomsday.
No, it would have been Justice League War, I think is what it was called. It was basically the one that they introduced to Justice League, and they replaced Aquaman with Shazam.
Yeah, but it was like, that was, like, they were all younger, I think, at the time, Superman and, or Wonder Woman was, like, just coming, like, to the front lines and, like, being known, but, like, Superman and Wonder Woman were dating or something. It was weird. It was Justice League War.
In the New 52, at one point, Superman and Wonder Woman did date because Superman and Lois weren't really a thing until Rebirth kind of brought the original timeline characters back.
Yeah.
Like, that whole stuff is really confusing because, like, technically all of the other superheroes are still the same ones that existed in Flashpoint, but Superman and Lois aren't. They are actually from a different universe that basically their characters took over the places of Superman and Lois of that universe, who both died. But not in like a... Initially, it was kind of in a more like, yeah, we're just going to pretend to be them because we got stuck here anyway. And then eventually they're just like, oh yeah, no, weird things happened. What's that little fucking imp's name? You have to say is... Mitzelplix. I can never say that right.
Mitzelplixus. It's something like that.
You know who I'm talking about, though. He's the little imp from the fourth dimension.
Yeah.
Or fifth dimension or something like that.
Yeah, he was played by two different people in Wonder Woman. Or, I mean, in Supergirl.
Yeah, he was Tom Lennon in one of them.
Yeah, that's one of them, yeah.
It's Supergirl. You keep saying Wonder Woman.
Supergirl. I said Wonder Woman, and then I went to say, like, I think I actually went to say Superwoman, and then I said Supergirl. I did say Supergirl.
Okay. But... Yeah, he had a story where basically he was the catalyst that kind of merged their identities. So, like, that Clark and Lois, as well as their son, were just part of that continuity, like, from the beginning. It's very weird. It's very comic booky.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, like, just to kind of get back on track. So, they've had all those crises. So there was Infinite Earths, brought it down to one. I want to say Identity Crisis was a Green Lantern one. That was where Hal Jordan went evil, if I remember correctly. I think Infinite Crisis was the one where all the worlds got put back, maybe? I might be getting that confused. I know Infinite Crisis is the one where Superboy Prime punches a hole in reality because he's mad at everybody.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's been other ones since then, too. But Death Metal basically just... They were basically fighting the creators of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the bosses of those people showed up and were just like, yeah, we were just going to destroy you entirely because, well, like, y'all fucked up. It's like... But then we still saw, like, some of you people, like, actually fighting for, like, keeping it. So we're just going to reset everything. Like,
yeah,
we're gonna give you another chance. Just don't fuck. It's going to be weird, though. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, everything's different. So fucking good luck. But yeah, so the wording of it, though, it was basically like everything that had happened before every crisis and during all existed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, deaths and characters in different universes that were in the same, like, all that stuff kind of got undone. Or, I guess undone's not the right word. Like, it all got made canon.
Yeah.
So if, like, something happened in one continuity that was erased in another, they both things actually still happened. Or people at least remember them happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically laid it out where, like, yeah, people that have been dead for years might be alive again. Like, there were resurrections that, you know, were unforeseen. Kind of like when Jason Todd got brought back when Superboy Prime had his hissy fit.
Yeah.
And at the moment, like, Wonder Woman is missing. Like, she, as far as everyone knows, she did not return from that final battle.
Oh no, one of them was great.
Like, minor spoiler, like, she was the one that was fighting the Batman Who Laughs, who had, like, gotten all of the power.
Okay.
And she was basically the one that told the overall creators that, like, the world was going to be fine, but, like, she was needed for something else.
Yeah.
So, and, like, we already know, like, there's going to be another Wonder Woman book, and she was on the cover, so... But that also that also does fit in with the with her mother being on the Justice League, most likely.
Yeah,
because, like, she was on the Justice League in the teaser that they showed a couple weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was an interesting way to end things and to just be like, yeah, no, everything, just everything, all the Flashes, everything, because the Flashes and the Green Lanterns are the ones that are kind of easiest to tell because you have, like, your Golden Age, your Silver Age, and then, like, your modern Green Lanterns, for instance, and same thing with the Flashes.
Yeah.
So the fact that, like, if Jay Garrick, Barry, Wally, and then, like, the other speedsters all exist in the same timeline, then, like, you know, everything just kind of exists in one.
Yeah, pretty much.
And same thing with, like, the Green Lanterns. If Alan Scott and Hal Jordan and then, like, all those other Green Lanterns exist, then, like, they're all in the same universe, too.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because, like, they've been using Jay Garrick a little bit in the Flash comics, but, like, you haven't seen Alan Scott in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was part of, like, a Justice League storyline that took place in the past, like, a year or so ago. But other than that, like, hasn't really been around. Because when they did the New 52 stuff, they had an Earth 2 book that had Alan Scott and Jay Garrick, but as, like, younger, different characters.
Yeah.
Like, they both became, like, a Flash and a Green Lantern, but they were not the two characters you know them as, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with these DC books in March, because the whole DC line for January and February is the Future State stuff,
mm-hmm.
where, like, I don't think any one book takes place in a particular time period, though. It's like, I read a few of them yesterday, and, like, there's a Superman book that follows his son, John, who's been Superman for a decade. But it doesn't seem like it's that far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like, a Harley Quinn one where, like, she looks the same. Like, it looks like it's just tomorrow. But everything's, like, fucked in Gotham more so than it usually is. So it's kind of hard to tell, like, what futures these are, or even if they're all taking place in the same, like, future timeline.
Well, maybe Gotham finally caught up with the times and just became dilapidated within 3 days.
Well, so it's not even that. It's basically Gotham, like, somebody took over Gotham, like a government sort of somebody, mm-hmm. and they just outlawed heroes and masks. So, okay. Like, all the heroes are gone, and Harley got captured and is actually helping them capture a bunch of other criminals that were, like, still on the loose. Like, the first issue, she helped them catch Professor Pig and Firefly. Like, but basically just by profiling them, like a psychiatrist would.
Yeah.
Um, But yeah, so those books are weird, but I'm interested to see, like, once those are done, sort of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that DC, they're rebooting everything, maybe, again?
Yeah.
But not necessarily renumbering, but they most of the books have new creative teams starting in March, so...
Might be a good time to jump in if you're not a big comic collector and want to get into it.
Yeah, especially if, like, you're interested in, like, I wouldn't jump into Batman, because, like, Batman's keeping the same character, it's gonna be a continuation of what was happening in for the last year or so.
Yeah.
But, like, Superman's gonna have a new creative team, Justice League will have a new creative team, Flash, like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, this is just my biannual reminder, Awesome Games Done Quick is going on right now.
Nice.
It's going on till, it goes on through Saturday, like, it ends, like, early morning Sunday.
Yeah.
It's for breast cancer research this time.
Nice.
A couple hours ago, they were at about $500,000. I'm not sure what they're at now. I guess I could just refresh the thing. They're almost at $600,000. And they're playing Ratchet and Clank Going Commando.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it's a race, actually. Yeah, it's a race.
Oh, people that's fun.
Yeah, the races are really cool. Like, I watched, God, what was the race I watched the other day? Fuck. I watched a race. Oh, River City Ransom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just this race where, like, they were so close together. And then just at one point, like, one guy ended up dying on something. Like just a mistake happened. He didn't land something just right. And, like, that was the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
And there was, I watched one other one. Oh, Donkey Kong Country. Like, the first Donkey Kong Country. I watched it was basically a glitchless, run. So they had, and it was every level. So they couldn't use, like, warp barrels or anything like that. They had to go from beginning to end in every level.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was two guys, like, they were within about 5 seconds of each other for the entire thing. And it's just, like, every so often, like, it would kind of switch. Like, one person would pull ahead of the other. And then one, just like in River City Ransom, one of the guys made, like, a real small mistake, died, like, fell off a platform, I think, and had missed the, like, the midway barrel in the level. So had to start the whole level over, couldn't just start from the barrel. And that gave the other guy, like, a 2 minute advantage. Mm-hmm. And, like, at that point, unless that guy also made, like, a mistake like that, there was no way to actually catch up. But yeah, the races are cool. It's for a good cause. It's always fun to see people run these games and all the weird stuff they do. Like, I told Drew about it. I'm not sure if he watched it. They did a there was a Hades speed run last night.
Okay.
But yesterday afternoon, there was a Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1+2 speedrun. The guy did all goals and gold medals on all the competitions for both games in 22 minutes.
Damn.
And he actually did it in under 20. He did it in under 17 minutes, or under 18 minutes. It was just over 17 minutes.
I think I've seen someone do that on one of the IGN's Developers React. There was a Developers React to Tony Hawk Pro Skater 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, like, it was, I forget the exact time, so it was basically they cleared everything in Tony Hawk 1 in about 9 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then everything in Tony Hawk 2 in, like, 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was just, they weren't glitching things, like, there were no cheats or anything going on. They were just hitting all of these very specific routes to like, collect things. They were starting every map, doing, like, a, like, two tricks in a row that basically filled their special meter so that they had, like, that little bit of stat boost. And they knew, like specific things that kind of work certain ways. Like, in the San Francisco level, one of the goals, you actually have to get to the top of this really tall building and then, like, hit a ramp and land in the middle of a gazebo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pain in the ass to get up there, but there's, like, a certain way where, like, if you hit two tricks very specifically while wall riding, it basically just boosts you up to the top of the building.
Yeah.
And, like, he did that, like, first try, no problem.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch it, it looks like a bot's running the game. It's so exact and specific. And, like, little things like, the game apparently continues your forward motion for, like, a few seconds after you, like, quit. So, if say, like, the goal you need is directly in front of you, like, the last letter or the last object or something like that, you can end your run, and your character technically will keep moving and collect that final thing.
Okay.
And you'll get the credit for, like, having completed that specific goal. So
That's interesting.
Yeah, so, like, he was collecting everything and then ending his runs early by, like, just, a second or two. Just, like, early enough that, like, he'd collect that last thing or, like, land that last trick that he was in the middle of, to get whatever it is that he needed to get all of the goals in just a single run of. He never actually needed the full time limit on any of the 2 minutes on any level.
Yeah.
And all of the competitions, he only did two heats, and he only did them for maybe like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
He would go in there, he would do a bunch of tricks very quickly, and then end his run. And he just did it twice and then ended competition. And since the competitions are best two of three, as long as he had the two highest heats in his first two runs, he was good.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
It's nuts. I watched this one. It's, again, the IGN Devs React. It was for Resident Evil 2 Remake, or Remaster, whatever it's called. A person ran as Claire and would use pause as, like, some, like, if you pause the game and hit the, go into the pause menu at certain times, like, it would actually do something. Like, it would give you that, like, it would, like, I don't know, something would happen where, like, the zombies might be off, or this might be, like, a little slower, and it helps you, like, progress through the game, like, better, with better lines that, like, you don't have to fight things. But every time the person paused, they stopped their counter. And at one point, he paused for a good 3 minutes, and his timer stopped during the pause. I'm like, this ain't a speedrun then. This is not, you didn't get that record because you paused your game. Your timer should still have gone.
Yeah, no, that, like, anytime, like, in a lot of, like, speedruns, like, they have to pause the game to, like, do stuff, or they'll do, like a reset to, like, basically they'll save the game and then do, like, a hard reset of the game and load it back up to, like, load back at a checkpoint, basically.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And, like, yeah, their timer keeps running the whole time.
Yeah. I was, like, I was so mad. I was, like, this isn't a speedrun. But, yeah, check out the awesome games done quick if you like that stuff and you want to donate.
Yeah, it's a good time. They have, like, donations, incentives, and stuff, like always. And it's all online again. Like, they're not actually doing it in a location.
Yeah.
Next up, actual news. It looks like at least Sony Japan has discontinued the PS4 Pro and almost every other model of PS4 except for the all-black 50-gig slim model.
500-gig.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 500-gig.
I mean, that makes sense.
It does.
They don't need to make any more of them. So why make them when you need to make PS5s? Personally, I feel like maybe they should have stopped making some of them, or at least cut down on production a while ago.
Yeah, especially with the sort of supply constraints they have with the PS5.
Yeah.
And Microsoft actually made this move back in July. They discontinued the One X and the All Digital Edition.
Yeah. So like, it makes sense that they should have done it at least back then, like, or, like, not back in July, maybe, but, like, they probably could have done it in August or September to ramp up production for the PS5. Like, how many new consoles for the PlayStation 4 are being bought 2 months before the PS5 comes?
Yeah, exactly. Like, none, really.
Yeah.
And frankly, the people that bought PS4 Pros didn't mean to buy PS4 Pros.
Yeah. They were trying to buy the PS5 and accidentally got a PS4 Pro.
Exactly. It's not clear if they're gonna, if the US and, like, other markets are gonna be following suit or not. This was strictly Sony Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But odds are, like, I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Let's see. So there's a class action lawsuit against CD Projekt Red, right?
Okay.
I'm just gonna read a little bit of this article over at IGN because it was just easier than trying to, like, put in the necessary info.
Mm-hmm.
So, New York-based law firm Rosen Law Firm, I don't know why I double-did that. New York-based Rosen Law Firm has filed a class-action lawsuit against Cyberpunk 2077's publisher CD Projekt Red due to its alleged violation of federal securities laws. Law firm is filing the class-action lawsuit on behalf of purchasers of the CD Projekt between January 16th, 2020 and December 17th, 2020 and is seeking to recover damages for CD Projekt investors under the federal securities. So this is not like a class action lawsuit for the people that bought the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the people that have money invested in the company. So the lawsuit claims that CD Projekt has made false and or misleading statements and or failed to disclose that Cyberpunk 2077 was virtually unplayable on current generation Xbox or PlayStation systems due to an enormous number of bugs. In response to the many issues and the messy messaging surrounding the game's launch, Sony removed Cyberpunk from the PS Store. Microsoft and CD Projekt would be forced to offer full refunds for the game.
Sony, Microsoft, and PC.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I missed that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the lawsuit claims that as a result of the above, CD Projekt would suffer reputational and pecuniary harm, and that its statement about its business operations and prospects were materially false and misleading and or lacked a reasonable basis at all relevant times. When the true details entered the market, the lawsuit claims the investors suffered damages. So, yeah, the people that invest in CD Projekt are looking to get their money back. So I know, like, normally when there's, like, a class action lawsuit, there are so many people, so many people involved in it that, like, maybe you get, like, a $4 check.
Yeah.
If, like, you even bother, like, claiming on it. Like,
yeah.
I wonder how it works when it's, like, investors making a claim.
It would be, I don't know, this is tricky because it's like, where did it say something about their reputation? Say it was about the business operations prospects were materially false or misleading or lacked responsible bias and relevant, which was the market. Lawsuit claims investors suffered damages. But it said, CD Projekt Red would suffer reputational and pecuniary harm. So it's like, this is gonna do more harm than good. Like, yeah, it's like they're saying that everything from above is gonna harm the company, but like your own investors are suing you for your money back, which is going to also harm the company. I don't know. I think this is kind of baseless.
I mean, like, I can see it not being baseless for the investors though, who are like, their CD Projekt Red's stock definitely dropped.
Yeah.
Assuming that they're an openly traded company, I'm honestly not sure about that. But like, there's no way that their stock didn't plummet with all of the bad press they have going on right now.
Oh yeah, I mean,
which
absolutely
does impact investors. I'm not saying that they'll win, but like, it's not a baseless claim. Like, people did lose money, or are losing money, I should say.
So CD Projekt Red is as of 2017, it's the largest publicly traded video game company in Poland. And according to let's see, within the last month, yeah, it was $28 USD in on December 7th, and is now down to about $18.55.
Wow.
So I mean, yeah, that is a significant loss. It's a $10 loss, but at the same time, like, once they get the game actually working, it's gonna go back up, and people are gonna buy it again. Maybe, probably, I don't know.
That's the thing, we don't know. And
yeah,
people that invest in stuff don't really give a fuck about that.
No, they just, they want their money back. They invested this money in something that was supposed to be great. It's not great. Like, but that's the thing. Like, when you invest in something, it's a gamble. If it's not good, it's not good. Like, that's your fault for, like, you can't sue the creators of Bitcoin because Bitcoin hasn't risen in 2 months. No, like,
but that's different because CD Projekt Red just didn't disclose that this game was broken.
True, but I don't know.
Because that's the thing. Like, that game is so broken that companies stopped selling it and started offering refunds where they would never offer refunds before.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem.
And, like, I want to know how, like, this got through. Like, why it is that they released this when it was so broken, or how did it get so broken? If they've postponed it as many times as they have and still haven't been able to fix the bugs that people are seeing, like, where down the line is this issue?
So, I almost guarantee the issue lies with them trying to make it for too many different platforms. Because they were trying to release it for last gen, current gen, and PC, there's too many variables.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too big of a game to have that many variables.
Which, like, the crazy thing is usually it's PC that takes the hit, because PC has the more variables than anything else. Like, you would think that
they, like, probably developed this on PC, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did.
Because I think the original two Witcher games were originally only available on PC.
I think so too. It's just, it's crazy.
I mean, like, I think Cyberpunk is fun. It doesn't mean that it's not incredibly broken, and yeah. I'm lucky enough that I'm playing it on a next-gen console where it's functional.
And you're lucky enough to where, like, it's even functional with it be, like, not that you're playing it on a next-gen console and it's functional, but it's still functional with it being on a next-gen console, because there are still game-breaking bugs that can happen on the next-gen consoles as well.
Yeah, and, like, I just haven't hit any of those yet. And they have patched certain things. Like, they patched, like, the save issue where if your save file was too big, it would corrupt all the data.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, like, the claim, like, it's not a baseless claims at all, I don't think. But I doubt that it's going to actually get anywhere, because class action lawsuits, like, they kind of, like, fester in court for so long. And at a certain point, like,
Yeah, I think 6 years, 7 years after I bought something from PennyArcade.com, I got my notification I could get $3. So
yeah, like stuff like that. Like, yeah. I was still never able to claim any of those tickets from Ticketmaster from their big class action thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, they almost never put them up, and when they did, they sold out immediately.
Yeah.
Anyway, how's Hades?
Oh, yeah, so I got Hades. It was on sale on the Switch, so I bought it on the Switch. It's good. It's fun. Maybe hot take. I don't think it's Game of the Year material. I'll flat out say I am, like, it is a fun game. It's got really pretty art. The music's cool, but it's, like, it's kind of normal for that developer to have, like, that cool music and that cool art. But, like, overall, I don't think this is, like, Game of the Year material. I really don't. I don't know, the combat is kind of lacking. Like, I have unlocked every weapon. And, I would just, for something that has been, like, so highly regarded, I would expect it to be a little bit more flash and pizzazz when it comes to, like, some of the fighting. Like, the sword has 3 hits, and that's it. And it's the same 3 attacks, and then you use the special. There's no, like, variance, really, in the combos. There's, you get fists that all it does is punch. There's no flash and pizzazz about the fists. It's just punch, punch, punch. And it's, like, 6 or 7 punches in a row. Friggin', like, the weapons are kind of just lame. The bow and arrow sucks because you have to charge it to fire it. It's not just rapid fire or something like that. And then there's a gun, like a machine gun, which is cool, but you can't move while shooting it, so that is pretty lame. That, like, the whole idea of, like, escaping Tartarus and trying to get to the overworld and eventually to Mount Olympus, and, like, the story that's going on and finding out that your Persephone's son, which, oh my god, I think everyone should know that. I
didn't know that.
If you don't know anything about Greek mythology, then you wouldn't have known that. They say at the beginning of the game that you're Nyx's son, which I don't know who Nyx is. I've never heard of Nyx in Greek mythology, but what I do know about Greek mythology is, Persephone, I believe it's Persephone, I think that's what her name is, she was married to Hades, and she lived in Hades, and she lived with Hades in Tartarus, so, like, it kind of made sense that he's her son, and not Nyx's son. So, like, when they introduced Nyx, I was like, that's not who that's supposed to be, and then I think after about 2 hours, I got to a point where they showed me the story where he found out that Nyx isn't his actual mom, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of lame. Like, I don't know, I don't understand how people can say that it's Game of the Year material. It is a good game and it is fun, but I don't think it's Game of the Year material.
I don't know, like, you're the only person I've heard that has played that had that reaction.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm not that far. I mean, I got to the third, I'm in the third area, the Fields of Elysium. I just reached that, but like, the customization's cool, but it's too random for it to be really awesome, because it's the roguelike, so it's random what abilities you get. I like roguelikes, but the randomness of this game makes it too random for me to think that it deserves the highest regard that it's getting. Like I said, I still think it's a good game. I think it's a little overhyped.
I mean, that's fair. Everybody, like, whether it's Drew or people on Facebook groups and Twitter or, like, podcasts and stuff, like, love the game. Love the style of the mm-hmm. game, the story, the voice acting, the gameplay.
And maybe the further I get into it, I'll learn more about the story that makes it interesting. But the whole, like, because I'm a mythology nerd and I knew about Persephone and Hades, I was just like, right then and there, I was like, this doesn't make sense, because Hades is married to Persephone, it's always been Hades and Persephone, like, even when they don't get along, it's still always been Hades and Persephone, so, like, it doesn't make sense, who is this Nyx character, I need to look up Nyx, which I still haven't done.
Yeah, so maybe Nyx is actually, like, an important character, and you just have no idea, and you're being a grump for nothing.
I'm not even being a grump about Nyx, but it's just, like, the big, I guess maybe the, quote, big twist that you get at the beginning, I didn't get, because I already knew, like, I had assumed it. I was like, I from right off the bat, like, he has two different colored eyes. One is red and one is, like, blue. Like, he's going to be Persephone's son. It's his red eyes from Hades, his blue eyes from Persephone. And, like, she's not in the game, at least where I'm at or where I've gotten to. And so, like, I didn't question where is Persephone, but, like, when it turns out, like, oh, she left Tartarus. She left Hades. I'm like, okay, so the story is he's not trying to get to Olympus. He's escaping Hades because he wants to find Persephone, his mom. Alright, I guess that's cool, but, like, I don't know. I didn't think it was, like, where I've gotten to or what I've seen and done is that special. And the whole game, like, maybe after having had just played Bastion and then going to this and seeing how they progress between the two, I'm not all that, like, up its butt about it, because it's just, it didn't really change too much from Bastion. And it gives me a big, major Bastion feel, because it's from the same developer. So, like,
isn't it entirely different gameplay?
No, not really. The only difference is that this is a roguelike and Bastion wasn't. Bastion had the isometric style movement and camera view with the button pressing for attacking and hitting and, like, the different weapons, but you could upgrade them and customize your character before going out into the world. Whereas this one, like, all you choose is your weapon before going out into the world, and then everything else is random. Maybe if I could customize my stuff before going out into the world, I might be more into it. But I don't know. Like, the weapons are, like, kind of mundane. Like,
you know, I'm just throwing this out here. I think it's funny. Some of your complaints about Hades are the same complaints Drew and I have had about Monster Hunter.
Well, I'm not saying the game feels bad or anything. I'm just
saying, I didn't, like, say all of them. I said some of them, and I think it's funny.
Like I said, the art's cool. The story is nothing special to me because I know too much about Greek mythology. The combat style is just, like, I don't know. I feel like a game like this, it should be a little bit more flashy, and it's not. Like,
also, keep in mind, Supergiant's 20 people.
Is it?
Yeah, they're not a big studio. They're very small.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that's great for them that they're, like, they're making such a high-regarded game. I just, like, I don't know. I just don't think it quite fits up there with Game of the Year material. That's all. I also didn't think, like, Animal Crossing should have deserved Game of the Year material either. Like, I didn't think Animal Crossing was Game of the Year. Or should have been considered a Game of the Year. Just because of lack of content in that game.
I don't know. How many hours did you spend in Monster Hunter? Or, I'm sorry, not Monster Hunter, Animal Crossing.
I don't know. I spent a lot of hours in Animal Crossing, but it was very repetitive, and it's because I had nothing else to do, because we were in the middle of a pandemic and I didn't have a job.
Look, there were other games you could have played, but you put, like, 400 hours into Animal Crossing.
I was unemployed and wasn't buying games.
Specifically said multiple times, you've had a ton of games in your backlog that you just don't ever play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do. I have a ton of games in my backlog that I don't ever play, but that's just...
Plus years of PS Plus games that you haven't played.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you but had, like, stuff to play, you chose to play Animal Crossing for 400
hours. But that's because it was in the system.
It's because... you bought it digital, didn't you?
Yeah.
Just that you had fun with it for, like, 4 months.
I had fun with it, but, like, I'm having fun with Hades. I had fun with Animal Crossing.
Shitting all over Hades. I don't think you'll like it.
No, I don't think I feel like it was overhyped. And I don't think it's anything special than any of their other games that they... I think it's good, I think it's fun, and I like the rogue gameplay concept, and I like the idea behind it. But overall, like, I bought it because it was on sale, and, like, once I beat it once, I'll probably be done with it.
I think it is one of those games where, like, you get more of the story, like, on, like, multiple runs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to get through, I've never even gotten through Tartarus, or through Hades yet. Like,
when you say beat it, do you mean just, like, roll credits, or
roll credits,
actually
yeah.
beat it?
Roll credits.
Well, so that's what I mean. Like, I think it's one of those games where, like, more happens after each time you clear the game. It's kind of like Nier Automata.
I mean, if that's how it is, then I'm not going to get more than just rolling credits. Like, man. My ultimate goal is to get out of Hades, and if I enjoy the game enough, but, like, with the weapons available to me right now, and the highly randomness of the game, I don't see myself pushing forward too much. Like, I had an amazing build that I loved, that I wanted to keep using, and I want to be able to keep using. I'm probably never going to get that build again. And it was, I was using the sword, and I got, like, a vampire ability to where every time I hit things, I got health back.
I thought you could, like, do that. Like, I thought you could use the same build, like, even after dying. That's the way Drew always described it.
Unless I'm missing something, or it's something I unlock later. Right
now, you should
now,
ask Drew, because he might be able to clarify, like, that, because I was under that, like, impression.
Right now, you pick a weapon, and then you go out into the world. And you can get that build, but it's random what shows up, so you might not always get that build.
Yeah, I mean, I could have just completely misinterpreted, but I thought that he was saying that there were ways to kind of, like stock things that you particularly liked when it came to, like, skills or whatnot.
Well, skills, yes. There are, like, you can level up and you can use your nightshade, I think it's called. It's a little purple gem. I don't remember what it's called. You can use that to upgrade, like, your character themselves. And you can power everything up and set it and have them set up in that way to where, like, every, like, one of my abilities is, every time I die, or I, once per run, if I die, I come back with half my health, or 50 health. It's 50% health. So, like, I have that, it only happens once, I can upgrade it again to where it happens twice, or something like that. Or I can flip that and have it every room I come back, if I die, I come back with 30% health, instead of 50% health, once per run, it's once per room. Like, there's things like that that you can alter. But your weapon abilities, I have not been able to keep that build. So my vampiric touch, where I have only 20 health to start, but I'm taking health every time I hit something, I have to just luck into that. Or getting, I always go for Zeus's abilities, because Zeus, like, he has his magic ability, his cast is a chain lightning, and it's fantastic. But I don't always get that every run, because I don't always find Zeus. I might find, like, Ares or Dionysus is another one that I like to go for, because he has the poison ability. And so every time you hit things with an ability with Dionysus, they get what's called hangover, and that's poison. They take damage over time. So, like, that you can't, as far as I know, you can't build up before you go out into Tartarus. And, like, I understand, because you have to start fresh, and you're always starting from Area 1. You're never going from Area 2, 3, or 4. Like, that you have to build up your character. I get it. But, like, it's also a little too random to where, like, maybe let me have, like, some sort of template and then just power it up as I go.
I mean, have you thought about getting good?
I am good. I've played for maybe 4 hours and I got to the Fields of Elysium.
I don't know. I mean, like, if you don't die, you would keep the build you wanted.
Yeah, but, like, the game is built on dying, because if you don't die, you can't power up and you can't level up and you can't get new stuff.
I mean, if you were good, you wouldn't need to.
I mean, that is true. If you're, like, you could theoretically beat this game in one run. Like, it is, there is, you could, if you are that good at dodging and getting out of the way of the boss abilities and finding the right paths for the right abilities, you could beat it in one run. But it's probably, I'd have to watch those speedruns. It made me interested about the speedruns. Like, how do you speedrun Hades? It's a completely random game that's built on death.
I'll see if I can find, like, the VOD for it and send it to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see you and Drew talk about Hades when he's back.
Yeah, like, I'll definitely talk about it when he's back. He'll probably be back in a week or two. And I'm going to keep playing it. Like, I bought it because I needed a break from Hyrule Warriors, because it's so goddamn long. And I wasn't expecting it to be as long as it is. That I was like, I just needed a quick break, and then I'm going to go back, and I'm going to jump between the two. But, yeah, I was just like, I don't know. And my 14 runs into it so far, and I'm just like, this is fun, but I don't think this, I think it's been slightly overhyped. Or fairly overhyped, actually.
Oh, I mean, I can't argue with who I haven't played it. I'm just going by everyone else seems to love it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Nintendo made a little purchase recently. They're buying Next Level Games, which is the studio that did Luigi's Mansion 3.
Oh.
They've been working with Nintendo since, like, the GameCube era. So, they did two of the Mario Strikers games, which I think were the only Mario Strikers games, the GameCube one and the Wii one.
Yeah.
They did Punch-Out on the Wii. They also did Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon on the 3DS, as well as like some other like 3DS games, and they did some like licensed titles and like work for hire stuff, like the Wii exclusive Ghost Recon and the Captain America game that was based on the first movie.
Okay.
So like, you know, like they've kind of dipped their toes into like a bunch of different areas, but they've done good work with like the Luigi's Mansion games, and I never actually played it, but I know people really liked the Wii Punch-Out.
Yeah.
So like more of that, not a bad thing.
When was the last time Nintendo bought a developer?
Oh, I honestly don't know.
I didn't think they had a lot of third-party developers, if any.
So they actually have a fair amount of third-party developers that work on some of like Age of Calamity, for instance, is not is not an internal game.
Well, yeah, but like yeah, I know that. It's
all of their big games, like the mainline Mario and Zelda and all that sort of stuff. Those are always internal studios.
Yeah,
but usually like. Any sort of, like, offshoot, even if it's starring their main characters, are not done by internal studios.
Yeah.
So, like, most of, like, the Mario Sports games, stuff like that, like, usually other people. Or handheld versions of, like, console games. Mm-hmm. Like, the Metroid game that was on the 3DS was also Next Level.
Yeah.
But I think Retro was maybe the last they bought.
Okay.
And I think that was a very long time ago.
Yeah. But that's pretty sweet. They're getting new, what's the word? I can't think of the word. I don't know. But that's pretty sweet that they're doing, that they're bought a new team.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, you're right. Like they don't do that a whole lot.
Yeah.
So the fact that they did do it is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So I started playing a game. It's called Murder by Numbers.
Okay.
It's on the Switch. That was actually fairly cheap. I think it was only like $15 when I bought it. The best way I can describe it, it's a cross between Phoenix Wright and Picross.
Okay.
So it's a murder mystery game set in the 90s, on the studio lot of, like, a detective show.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing as, the woman that played, like, the detective on the show who just got fired.
Okay.
And you have this weird robot showed up and is asking you for help, but is also helping you try and figure out who murdered the showrunner. Because you were the prime suspect because you just got fired.
Yeah.
So it uses, and I actually had to look up this because I didn't know what these were called before. It uses nonogram-style logic puzzles, which if you ever played Picross, like, it's similar to that. But in this case, rather than you're, like, knocking things away, you get, like, a grid. And on, like, the edges, like, on the X and Y edges, it has like numbers. It can have one number or it can have like multiple sets of them.
Yeah,
and those are like how many boxes in a row need to be filled in.
Mm-hmm.
So if a row says it needs 5 boxes filled in and it's 10 boxes across, at some point in that row 5 boxes will be like connected one by one and filled in.
Yeah.
If like all the columns say that they only have say like 1 box though, you have to figure out, like, okay, which columns will this match up in that I can actually put 5 in a row that won't affect a different row on the grid?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, sometimes there'll be rows or columns that have, like, a 5 and then a 2 and then a 3. And it's basically a set of 5 with at least one space between it, and then a set of 2, again, with a space between it, and then a set of 3.
I think the DS or the 3DS had a Pokemon Picross.
Yeah. There have been a bunch of Picross games on the DSs and 3DSs.
I've had one or two versions of a Picross game either on my phone or on the DS. Those games are always like fun and nice little like quick puzzle games to play while you have spare time.
Yeah. So this one is cool because it mixes the Phoenix Wright like visual novel style with it.
Yeah.
So the puzzles come in when you're investigating. So you do the investigation where, like, the robot's basically, like, scanning the room.
Yeah.
And when you find an object, you click on it, and then you do one of the puzzles, and the puzzles ends up being, like, the picture. Like, you're basically, like, the robot's broken, and the puzzle is basically deciphering what the picture is.
Okay.
And then once you have the picture, you then, that becomes, like, evidence. So if you find, like, you know, a scrap of paper or something like that, or a broken coffee cup.
Yeah.
And then, like, outside of the investigation, you can question people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like the different people in the room and stuff like that, you can talk to them and then use the items you find as, just like in Phoenix Wright, like as like evidence, be like, well, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And get different reactions for that.
Yeah.
So I haven't played a ton of it yet. I think there's like three cases in it to do, and I'm still on the first one. Some of those puzzles are super time consuming just because like when the grids are, you know, 10 by 10, it takes a while to figure out exactly like what numbers, like how it works out, unless there's something real obvious at the beginning that'll like, let you fill in a bunch of boxes right away.
Yeah.
So like it's one of those, you know, pick it up, play it for a little while, put it down, go back to it again.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it a lot, and it's definitely interesting, and the whole 90s setting is fun because, like, you know, you're finding, like, VHS tapes, and people talk weird, and no one has a cell phone or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm enjoying it. I definitely recommend it. It came out earlier this year, back in, like, the spring.
You mean last year?
Yes, Jesus, yeah. It came out last spring. The studio that made it, the same studio that made Fall Guys.
Nice.
Yeah,
awesome.
That studio has made a ton of games.
Yeah. They make some good games. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't. But, like, it seems like they're like, I don't know. They're a fun studio.
Yeah, they're Mediatonic is who made them. They've been around since 2005.
Yeah.
They did a lot of, like, Flash games.
Yeah.
Before this. And, like, some, like, iOS games and stuff like that. And then, yeah, it was really just in the last maybe, like, 5 or 6 years. Like, they're also the people that did Hatafo Boyfriend, which is the dating sim where all the boys turn, or all the birds turn into boys.
Yeah.
They did the that Fables Fortune game. It was, like, the Fable free-to-play card game thing.
Yeah.
From 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Gears Pop. The Funko Pop-styled Gears of War game.
I just went to their website. Apparently, they did Yahtzee with buddies. So I wonder if they also did like words with no, it'd be with buddies, so probably not.
I see what you're looking at though.
Yeah.
Like they did Bejeweled 2 and Diner Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a sweet company.
But yeah, like this game, if you only know them for Fall Guys, it's obviously a very different game from Fall Guys. But it's a lot of fun. And
yeah.
It's available on Switch and Windows right now. And like honestly, Switch is like the perfect place for it. Because like being able like playing it in handheld mode while you can like also watch TV and kind of like just put the console to sleep when you like need a break to like think for a few minutes is
yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. And it does have some like hint modes and stuff like that where you can like you just hit the minus button, like if you're completely stuck, you can have it like fill in 5 random blocks, or you can have it mark any boxes that are incorrect that you have filled in.
Mm-hmm.
So like both of those things actually lower your score, though. So it's one of those, like, you want to use it sparingly, or you're not going to get a high score and, like, level up. Because there is a level system. I'm not sure what that does yet. But, like, there's been a couple times where I have something mostly filled out, and there's just, like, a section where I can't get a few things to, like, line up correctly.
Yeah.
So I'll do that, like, show me what's wrong, and it'll show me that, like, oh, I have, like, these 4 things filled in when they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And, like, I can unfill those and then go back and be like, okay, so what do I have to do to fill in these rows the way that they need to be filled in?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because sometimes, like, you'll fill stuff in and it's just like, okay, like, this seems like the right thing to do, but, like, this, now this column can't be done. The fuck do I do?
Yeah. I love Picross games, and that's a neat little, like, upgrade to it.
Yeah, and it's fairly inexpensive, too.
Yeah.
And also, just as, like, a fun little aside to it, so on my phone, because I'm a fucking psycho and I use Bing for all those points, when I Googled Murder by Numbers, the like search landing page is a weird mashup of this game and the 2002 Ryan Gosling, Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah.
So like when you just search Murder by Numbers, there is the trailer for the game, but the cover for the movie. If you search Murder by Numbers game, it's flopped. It's the trailer for the movie, but the cover of the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was very funny.
And don't think that you're weird because you use Bing. I'm recording on Zencastr using Microsoft Edge, so...
Yeah, that's because your computer's a piece of shit.
Hey, it works. It works. It worked for Brose. It's working for this.
And honestly, Bing is much better than it was a year ago. Like, they rebuilt it on Chromium, and it's actually functional now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I do not tell people to not use Bing, or to not use Edge like I used.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if you saw this or not, But reports are that Jodie Whittaker is going to be leaving Doctor Who after this next season.
Well, it's the season that's airing now, right?
Well, there is no season airing now. That they had New Year's special. That was it.
Okay, yeah. So their season that just ended, and so their next season is going to be her last. Which, I mean, I haven't watched all of her stuff. I think I got like midway through her first season. I liked her as a doctor, but yeah, doctors don't last long anymore.
No. So I mean, this would be her third series. That's kind of the common thing. Like, other than Eccleston, everybody has done three series.
Yeah.
Tennant was a little longer, but only because he did a year's worth of specials.
Yeah.
Because he did a series with Rose, a series with Martha, a series with Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did the special with the thief princess girl on, like, the desert planet.
Yeah.
The Waters of Mars, where he was on Mars. And the end of time for Christmas and New Year.
Yeah.
But Matt Smith did three series. Peter Capaldi did three series. Not surprising if she only does three series. And apparently a good number of the classic doctors also only did three series.
Yeah.
But just because I think you were a little confused before, the most recent season actually ended almost a year ago. It ran like January to March of 2020. So there hasn't been anything since then. And then there was a New Year special, and then the next series, I believe, is supposed to air in the fall.
Okay, so that's probably what, I guess I thought the new series had just started because I knew they had a recent special.
Yeah, I think they've done New Year specials the last 2 years instead of Christmases.
Yeah, I knew they had a recent episode. I thought it was the new season, or the new series, and not just a special.
It is a bummer. So I watched her first series, and I watched the New Year special last year. I have not watched the second series yet. I actually really like her as the Doctor. Her companions are awful, and the showrunner is garbage.
I think I heard that her companions in the new season, or in the most recent season, were better.
No, they're the same companions.
Were they? I thought they were different.
Nope, it's the one like younger guy and like the girl that he had gone to like school with that they weren't really friends, they just knew each other.
Yeah.
And then his step grandfather.
Okay.
They were slightly better in the New Year special than they had been in the whole previous season. But the problem is like the showrunner is legitimately bad, and that's not like I see that online, like on Facebook groups and stuff like that, that occasionally talk about Doctor Who. Like, some people just suck, but a lot of people are just like, she's really good as the Doctor. The stories and writing are all bad.
Yeah.
Like, I watched the whole first season, not a single one of those episodes was memorable. Whereas, like, the last four Doctors, even if all of their seasons as a whole weren't memorable, they all have, like, at least a handful of memorable episodes.
Yeah.
I can tell you in the first episode that she was in, the old lady died. And I think they went to Pakistan in an episode.
So, let's see. Of the episodes I saw, the first episode, I don't even remember her first episode. I think, the next episode I remember, they were on a desert planet running a race and got to, a deserted city. I think that might be the same season or the same episode.
Are you reading something, or are you just trying to go off a memory?
I'm just going off a memory. And then, I think there was one other episode. Oh, there was an episode where she met Rosa Parks, I believe.
Okay, I actually do remember that episode, but I don't remember anything about that episode.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's what I mean. All the writing has been atrocious.
Yeah.
Two of the three companions left. So the guy and his grandfather, I think, are both gone. It's just the girl left.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a new person that's going to be coming into it when the new series comes on.
Yeah.
But, honestly, it's kind of a shame, because I would have loved to see her as the Doctor with somebody that actually knows how to write. Or just a team of people that have ever seen the show before. Because, I get the impression that no one that's working on the show now actually knows what the show is. Or the showrunner is just so up his own ass, he's not really taking anyone else's suggestions. He's just dictating what they should write.
Yeah, which is bullshit either way.
But, Moffat's stuff wasn't always great. Like, his overarching stories, were very hit or miss.
Yeah.
But episodically, they were always very good. When he just had, those one-off episodes. And, like, Russell T. Davies, before that, like, wrote a bunch of really, really good, really memorable arcs for the character. And then we get this guy, I think his name is Chibnall? And, like, he's not good.
Yeah.
And he's sticking around. So we're going to get another Doctor with this guy just ruining the franchise.
But hopefully, like, I know all the fans are saying, like, she's really good, it's the writing, but hopefully BBC sees that, like, it wasn't her, it was him. And they need to get rid of him instead of the Doctor. Or they need to find a new showrunner because he sucks.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know how those contracts work or anything like that. Or
yeah,
like, I don't even know what. So since they're like government funded, like I don't know if like ratings really matter that much.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure it does to an extent, but like I just don't know how much.
Yeah, true.
But anyway. Just to go along with this, BBC is also refusing to comment on it. So like this is all just sort of secondhand reports of people saying that, like, she has commented on leaving.
Okay.
A lot of outlets are making it sound way more aggressive than it needs to, though. Like the Mirror, which is, like, a UK outlet, like, their headlines were, like, Jodie Whittaker quits Doctor Who role and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe she was contracted for two more seasons. She just doesn't want to do it after the third. Maybe somebody she's working with absolutely sucks, and she doesn't want to work with it anymore, and they're not going to work with her. Maybe that's why they're refusing to comment. Like, I don't want to, like, throw rumors. It's just, there's so much out there that we don't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. And it just sucks that the outlets are making it sound way more aggressive than it needs to be at this
point. Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, I just took a drink. You started watching Kim's Convenience.
Oh, I finished watching Kim. Well, I caught up.
Oh, that's right. You were watching it last week.
Yeah. I finished what's on Netflix earlier this week or last weekend. And it's good. It's a good show. It's a comedy show. It's half hour.
It's still running?
Yeah. So it is.
Oh, I thought it was over.
When I was talking to you about it, I didn't know any of this. I thought it was a Netflix original. It's not. It is a Canadian Broadcasting Center show. It's a CBC show that airs seasonally. We would consider it like a mid-season series. It's 10 episodes, 10 to 13 episodes generally. 20 minutes, and it is a show about I guess you would call them first and second generation, cuz the mom and dad are first generation, but they had their kids in Canada, so their kids are second generation, a Korean immigrant family in Toronto who own a convenience store, bodega, whatever you want to call it, like a corner store, whatever you want to call it, that's what it is. And it's about their lives, and season one starts where, like, there's discontent between the son and the dad, and they don't talk anymore, and, like, where it brings it in to where it got to at the end of season four, it's just, like, it progresses really good, and it's, like, a good story, it's a funny show. The lead actor played the Ranger from the Republic Ranger from The Mandalorian. I'm not gonna try to say his name because I can't remember it right now, and it is a very Korean name, so I don't want to butcher it. and the other lead character, the older son, is Shang-Chi in the Marvel universe.
That I didn't know.
Yeah, he's going to be Shang-Chi. Like, it threw me off big time when I found out that the main character, Mr. Kim, was the Republic Ranger from The Mandalorian, because in The Mandalorian, he has no accent. But in Kim's Convenience, he has the strongest Korean immigrant accent you could think of. It's so, like, crazy, like, how good he is at this.
That's what acting is there, but
I mean, it's what acting is, and I'm sure, like, I don't think he's an immigrant, or he's a first generation immigrant, so he probably grew up with it with his father or people within his family in general, so he's able to copy it easily. But it's just, it is good. It is, a nice tale. It's a nice story. It's funny. And the end of season four, it left me kind of bummed, because you find out the mom is sick somehow, but they don't tell you what's wrong with her. It's just like a throwaway line, kind of, that, like, the daughter is going away for a summer break, and the dad, Mr. Kim, asks his wife, like, why didn't you tell her? And his wife turns around, she's like, the doctor says it's probably not going to progress much in 4 years, or 4 months, or 4 years, you don't know. so I'm not going to worry her. So I'm just like, oh no, the mom's sick, and this sucks, because this is such, like, an endearing show, and it's so good that, like...
Yeah, that is a shame. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, that means they're doing a good job by, like, making you care about them.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it like, you also, like, pick up on things, because it is, like, it's a show based on a screenplay with the same name, stage act. Called Kim's Convenience, written by a Korean person. I can't remember their name. But, like, it you pick up and learn a lot, like, an amount of, like, Korean culture as well. And, like mom and dad in Korean is, appa is dad, and uma is mom. And so, like, you learn that. And, like, I've looked up what, like, some of the food is that they're having, because, like, they talk about a lot, and uma cooks it a lot. One of the main characters' name is Kim Chi. He talks to Mrs. Kim. He calls her and Mr. Kim, uncle and auntie in Korean, which is like, I had to look up what that meant. I was like, this is like the cool dynamic that they have. And it's just funny. And like, they've got some good characters in the show.
Well,
it's definitely worth a watch if you're looking for something like new to watch, because The Office is no longer on there. From what I read, it will become it. It's the season 5 is airing, or will start airing soon at the CBC. And once it's done airing at the CBC, becomes available internationally, like the United States, immediately.
Oh, that's
and then
cool.
It's a year later, or close to a year later, after it finishes airing for Canadian broadcast or for Canadian Netflix.
Oh, I guess because they probably want to try and get the like the DVD sales and stuff like that in Canada.
They the CBC has its own like free streaming service, and so it's on there. It's on there for a certain amount of time before it is on Netflix.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense then.
Yeah, so like I guess it's kind of like the CW app, where like it's a free app but with ads, and you can watch the show the next day. I think that's like the same thing. Like you can watch the new episode the next day, and it's on there for a while, but not right away not for long, not forever.
Yeah, and it looks like, so just to, because I brought the Wikipedia page, it was renewed for 2 more seasons.
Okay.
Last March. And okay. Season 5 will start on the 19th of this month.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's with 13 episodes, 13 weeks, that'll be February, March, April, May or June, it should be on Netflix. A new season should be on Netflix.
Yeah, no, that seems about right.
Yeah.
And also, I looked up... The main character that was in The Mandalorian. So he was actually born in South Korea.
Okay.
But he did move to Canada with his parents when he was just 3 months old. So he definitely grew up like probably speaking Korean at home and English everywhere else.
Yeah. I watched like an interview with him. He's like a big like Star Wars cosplayer and has made his own Star Wars costumes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, if you can look him up, and like he, you can see it might be on some of his Instagram or social medias. Like he has made his own cosplays for Star Wars stuff. He seems like a really cool guy, and he was super excited, and like I think he like almost cried when they hired him for The Mandalorian. And it was initially supposed to be kind of like a walk on role that just became more of a thing,
which is cool. And I mean, yeah. I don't know that it's been confirmed that he will really be a major part of the Ranger show, but
yeah,
he might at least show up in it a few times.
Yeah, and which would be nice, like at least until he's he no longer has Kim's Convenience. It's something that like he can like come back to from time to time,
because I know
sometimes some contracts don't let you work on multiple shows. So.
Oh, I mean, sometimes it's not even contracts; it's just availability.
Yeah,
like especially like if Kim's Convenience films in Canada, but The Mandalorian's films in, like, the UK or something like that.
Yeah, true.
Which I think that's where it does film, so...
I mean, that's where most of the new trilogy filmed, so that would kind of make sense.
Yeah, I mean, most of the Lucasfilm stuff, I think, like, when they're doing studios, like, soundstage stuff, it's in London.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know if you saw this one ahead of time. Zack Snyder has commented that he has no more plans to do DC movies after the Justice League miniseries.
I mean, I've got no comment on that until I see the Justice League thing.
That's fair. So I actually have like his actual comment. So he did an interview with Comic Book Debate. And then this, the quote was on Collider. He said, "Look, I never thought I'd be here doing this. I didn't think I'd be finishing Justice League. The truth is, and it's been widely reported, and I have no issue, this is an old movie. This is a years old movie I'm working on. The DC Universe has gone and branched off and done its own thing, and that's fine. As far as what I did, as far as what my vision for what I wanted to do with these characters and the journey I wanted them to go on, it's well known that I planned on more movies. 5 movies or something, but I'm busy. I've got a lot going on. Is it cool that the fans have so much faith in the trajectory? Yes, it's amazing, and I couldn't be happier, and I'm excited for them to see Justice League so they can really drink the entire elixir of Justice League. But would I continue? I have no plan to. But like I said, I don't think I'd be here. I didn't think I'd be here, so who knows?"
Yeah. I don't think that necessarily means he's not going to, but like you said, he doesn't have plans on doing more.
Yeah, and like, frankly, with again, like, kind of like what he said, with the trajectory that those movies are going in, like, his vision doesn't really fit anymore.
Yeah.
And like I've said it multiple times, like, I don't think he's a good filmmaker. I think he's a great cinematographer. Like, I think that's what he should focus on, because he, like, his idea for the way scenes, especially action sequences, play out is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the fights in, like, the Justice League and even in Batman vs. Superman were great.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have any concept of character development or pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm going to watch the Justice League to see what it's like. But, like, the 3 DC movies he did are hard to fucking watch because they're just, they're boring for 90% of it.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happens. There's no real character development. Like, every once in a while he does, like, an unnecessary exposition dump instead of, like, letting it organically develop through the story, and then he just has cool fight scenes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I like, if he makes more, he makes more. Like, I think that whole universe is fucked right now. Like, they need to hopefully the Flash movie actually does just sort of reset everything.
Yeah, definitely.
But, like, we'll see. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that, like, he just came out, he's like, "I'm not planning on doing anything after this." Like,
yeah.
Unless they give me a big movie check, I'm probably not working with him anymore.
Which makes sense, and it might be in part because of what they're doing with their films next year, how everything is going to HBO Max, or it might be in part, like you said, he's busy, he's got other stuff going on. Like, he was not contracted for any of these other films, so he doesn't have to do them. It just makes sense.
Yeah, and like, his vision of that stuff, just, it doesn't fit with what they're doing at all.
It doesn't.
So, but you watched Soul this week, too.
Yes, I did. We didn't really get to watch it last week because you were the only one who had watched it.
We didn't get to talk about it last week.
What did I say?
You said we didn't get to watch it last week.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about it last week because you were the only one who had watched it. I watched it this week. I actually watched it Monday night. And that is, oh man, it's a good movie.
You cried, didn't you?
No, I got super emotional when they were about to go back to the Great Before, but I didn't necessarily cry, but it's a movie that puts things into perspective a bit, and like, it's so crazy to see like a Disney Pixar movie that, like, yeah, most Disney Pixar movies are made for both adults and children.
Yeah.
But this one felt more leaning for adults. Like, it still has that children aspect, and children are gonna enjoy it. It's flashy, it's colorful, it's got the crazy cat, things like that.
Yeah, but there was, like, a lot of humor, but, like, yeah.
But, like, for, it's, like, it is really, it's strongly made for adults. And, yeah, like,
I don't disagree with that. I think the story would resonate more with, like, an adult, whereas, like, the humor and everything is gonna resonate with, like, the younger people.
Yeah, and it's just, like, it does bring a lot of perspective, and it is a very strong, like, message movie, more so than just a movie, kind of, like, stop obsessing over things, and it's a movie about obsession and understanding your life and making the best out of it and everything. It's just, like, it gets you to think. With that said, the movie is absolutely fucking beautiful. The set design, the set pieces look almost real. The characters themselves in the human world, at least, look really good. Like, it is just beautiful movie.
Yeah, the only thing that, like, after, like, I watched it and, like, kind of had time to think about it, that, like, just didn't land, I think, is, like, the ending. I think the ending was just a little too ambiguous.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the ending, they had to do that because it's a kid's movie, like, give him his life back. But I feel like it would have hit better if he had gone to the great beyond instead of getting his life back.
See, because, I don't necessarily...
Well, there's a line at the very beginning where when he was talking to his buddy, or his previous student, like, I could die happy if I played with her. So I felt like, because as he was playing with her while he was doing the show, like, he's realizing, like, this isn't really what he wants to do with the rest of his life, and what does he want? And, like, he started wondering, like, it seemed like he started to want more in a personal sense and not to be famous. And then, like, I, to me, it felt like, okay, he got what he wanted, and he could die happy. And so it would have been, for, as an adult for me, it would have been like a, he got the thing he always strived for, and he can move on now, and he's happy with that, and he's content, and his soul is in peace.
So, but I think that goes against what, like, the kind of story was saying, like, because, like you said, by the time he got to play with her, he realized that, like, or not by the time he did, but, like, after he did, he realized that, like, that wasn't what he wanted his life to be.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, he gets, like, the lesson of, or not the lesson, but, like, hears from, like, the people. It's like, oh, yeah, no, like, the spark isn't the thing that you need to do. It's just, it's the first thing that catches you.
Yeah.
It's the thing that makes you excited to be alive.
But, I mean, it also goes along with, the, like, my thought on the ending, like, it goes along with the, like, idea of, like, he reached his goal, and the reason he started realizing it's not what he, like, it's not what he wanted is because he finally had it. Once you get what you want, you don't always want it. And so he started to realize, like, it's one of those, like, you finish your bucket list, what do you have to live for anymore? And I think that's kind of what went on his head, is like, now that I've done this, and now that I'm getting my big break, do I still want this? And, like, and that's why, like, him giving 22 the sticker to come to Earth, like, I was like, oh, he's realizing, like, his time is up, and he doesn't need it anymore.
And, I mean, he was okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, he was resigned to that. And but see, like, I didn't think that, like, him, not, like, for him just coming back and everything like that hurt the ending. It was more just, like, the movie just kind of ends. And it's just, like, I feel like that, like, there should have been one more scene of just, like, him going back to teaching or something like that. Like a final scene of him, like, in the classroom, like, expressing what music means to him, to his students.
I understand that. I kind of feel like the if the final scene were to be him with his student who really liked playing her trombone, like, that would have been good. Like, instead
like
of him,
the one that was trying
out,
to quit.
Yeah, instead of him stepping out the door and going, then pushing his life forward, which is what it was, I guess, supposed to symbolize, it would have been like him coming to grips with what his life is and what he wants it to be, and to be a teacher and to be a role model for these children.
Yeah, especially because, like, in that opening scene, like, when he's in the class and, like, he's playing the music and, like, explaining, like, what it means to him, like, at that point, like, the music is the only thing that really means anything to his life.
Yeah.
But, like, now he has that new outlook where it's, like, this isn't the only thing. Because, like, throughout, like, the course of the movie, like, he realizes that, you know, there are people in his life that he really didn't know anything about because he never stopped to really, like, get to know them.
Yeah. And, like, the show even gave a good message for 22 because she, or they, actually, because they're a they're non-binary, they didn't, what's the word? Like, they didn't have a purpose, and they were always obsessing over trying to find a purpose, or not really obsessing, but they didn't have any push to go into the world, but then she lived life in somebody else's shoes, and she actually found beauty in the world. And that's, like, kind of like a story that needs to be said, is, like, live your life in somebody else's shoes and find out how difficult or how different the world can be from somebody else's perspective. And that's when they got their sticker or whatever completed and were able to make their way down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's a really good movie. Like, it's definitely not like a Moana style, if my child wanted to watch it every day, I would let them movie, because that would make me way too depressed. But it is still a good movie that if my child wanted to watch it often, I'd be okay with.
Yeah, I think I think the difference there is, like, if you really think about it, the Pixar movies, other than maybe Cars, don't have that, like, gonna watch it every day feel to them.
Yeah.
It's the Disney animation movies, like,
yeah,
your Moanas, your Frozens, your Tangleds.
Yeah, yeah,
that
exactly.
Tend to have that sort of, like, you know, there's songs and bright colors and stuff to really keep, like, young kids entertained for just hundreds and hundreds of rewatches.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Like, it's a very good movie.
It is.
So we got a confirmation on WandaVision of how many episodes the season's going to be.
Okay.
So it's going to be 9 episodes. So it's actually going to be an episode longer than both seasons of The Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually going to put it to the week before Falcon and Winter Soldier premiere.
Oh shit. It is. Falcon and Winter Soldier is coming out this year. That's right.
Yeah. So WandaVision will air from like January to like the middle of March. And then the week after it ends, Falcon and Winter Soldier will start.
Nice. That's awesome, because I need me some Marvel in my life.
Yeah, it's like they have enough series due out this year that they might actually be released fairly close together.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a super small news thing, but I just
yeah,
I thought that was interesting.
It is pretty interesting that it's 9 episodes. I also wonder, like, how they're going to do WandaVision. Like, is this going to be a seasonal show, or is this, like, a mini-series, like, a one-off thing? Like, because this is supposed to lead right into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of... Or maybe not right into, but have lead-ins to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
And also Captain Marvel 2, because Monica Rambeau is going to be in both.
Right. Yeah, Monica Rambeau's in them. So, like, is this a one-off thing? Like, are the Marvel things going to generally be one-off? Like, I can see Falcon and Winter Soldier maybe not necessarily having to stick with that one-off thing. But, like, I feel like WandaVision might be. But we'll have to, like, more so wait and see how the show is. I'm super interested in the show. Like, it looks really cool.
Yeah, like, it does look really neat. And there was another, like, minor piece of news that it sounds like they're going to have different sort of classic theme song, sitcom theme songs throughout the show.
That's awesome.
Based on the era that it's, like that the episode's taking place in. Because
yeah,
it's going to be, like, there's going to be episodes based around, like, the late 50s, early 60s sitcoms, the, like, late 60s, early 70s sitcoms, and the 80s and 90s, like, TGIF era sitcoms.
Yeah.
Also, this is just Marvel adjacent, because we were talking about the other shows. So, like, I've talked about before, like, Erica and I started watching Buffy.
Yeah.
And we got to the point where Angel starts. So we actually have been bouncing back and forth, like, watching an episode of Buffy, watching an episode of Angel. Because those two shows have episodes that cross over, and that for most of their run, they aired back-to-back. Like, Buffy aired first, and then Angel aired after it.
Yeah.
We just watched an episode, I think it was yesterday. The villain of the episode of Angel was Jeremy Renner.
Oh, nice.
He was actually a vampire that, that Angel sired back in, like, the late 1700s.
Oh, man.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so he was going around L.A. killing people the way Angel used to, by basically tormenting them, and then carving a cross into their face and draining all their blood.
Okay.
And he had apparently been doing that for hundreds of years.
Oh, boy.
Like, he would like, do it in batches, like in different cities, or like, around the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, like... He was basically a serial killer vampire, because he had, like, the same MO. So, like, he was basically killing a facsimile of his family over and over again. So,
okay,
like, somebody that fit his mom, his dad, his brother, like...
Okay.
Yeah. But I saw, when they first showed him, I'm just like, God, that looks familiar. That looks like Jeremy Renner. I'm like, I guess, like, he would be about, like, the right age to have been on this. And I looked it up, and it was Jeremy Renner. I'm just like, fuck.
Yeah.
But, like, he looks, I mean, obviously, he's 20 years younger, but, like, he almost looks like a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was, that show, those two shows have a lot of, like, people pop up on them that you're just like, I know that person. And then you look it up, you're like, holy shit, it's them.
Yeah, it's always fun to watch those older shows and be like, oh shit, this is where they got their break. Or, oh shit, they were in, like, there's, as dumb as it sounds, there's, like, this weird, like, love movie where, what's his name, the Hulk, is in it. And it's actually a really good movie, but, like, I found out, like, oh, yeah, that's right. He was, like, a drama actor before he became Bruce Banner.
Not only just a drama actor, he did a lot of, like, indie film.
Yeah, like, he was, like, a hardcore actor before he became, like, this comic relief, nerdy guy.
So like, to be fair, he did do a lot of comedies.
Well, yeah, he was always like the comic relief guy. Not necessarily the nerdy guy, but like the movie, I can't remember the name of it, and I think was it Drew Barrymore or was it the girl who plays Elle Woods in Legally Blonde? It was a girl who plays Elle Woods in Legally Blonde.
Reese Witherspoon,
I think it was her. Or honestly, some other blonde woman from that era. She was dead. He was alive, but she was only able to talk to him. But like, he ended up being the heartthrob in the whole movie, which was weird to see.
It was just like Heaven.
Yeah.
With Reese Witherspoon.
Okay.
Where I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for it right now. Once you started describing it, I vaguely remember it because I think I have seen bits and pieces of this movie.
Yeah.
Because it was she died. And then haunted the apartment that he moved into that was her apartment.
Yeah.
And, like, at the beginning of it, it was one of those, like, she didn't know she was dead sort of things.
Yeah. And, like, she wasn't dead. She was, like, in a coma or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think the end of the movie, they got her out of her coma. They got her back into her body or something. More of the story. It was shockingly a good movie. And I was just like, holy crap, it's what's his name? And I forgot that he wasn't always, like, this kind of action, kind of not action actor, and was like actually dramatic and funny as well.
Yeah,
Mark Ruffalo, that's his name.
Yeah, I was just going through it. Yeah, he at the end of the movie, Reese Witherspoon wakes up from a coma, but doesn't remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
No, I mean he's been in a lot of stuff over the years.
Yeah,
he was in Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind.
I've only seen that once, and I don't remember any of it.
Oh, your entire life's a disaster.
But then it's like it's also funny to think like. Not another teen movie. Fucking Chris Evans, Captain America. Like, he walks around at one point with whipped cream around his butt and a banana in it.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I think he has it on his chest, too.
I think it's like a whipped cream, like
bikini.
Bikini, yeah. Or thong or bottom or Speedo or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. It's weird.
So, look. I've got good news. I've got bad news. Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind is available to watch on the internet, but you're going to have to pay $3.99 on Amazon. But you should 100% pay $3.99 on Amazon and watch this.
I feel like I saw that it was free somewhere, but it is something that I have wanted to watch recently. I just never got around. Like, rewatch, just never got around to it.
Yeah.
One of those, like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. It was weird.
Good movie. It's weird. Yeah. But it's probably one of Jim Carrey's best movies.
Yeah. It came out in that time where I was too young to understand it and thought it was just weird and not really, like, into it.
Yeah, it was this movie and Big Fish came out, like a year or so apart. And both of those movies were, like, weird. They had some comedy to them, but they were also, like,
yeah.
dramatic and stuff like that.
The
but
funny
both
thing
of them
is,
were amazing.
The funny thing is, I really liked Big Fish. And I watched that when it came out in theaters, but like, I think it was like shortly before I watched that I saw Eternal Sunshine and Spotless Mind. And I think I just went into it expecting full on comedy because it was Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura antics. And it wasn't. So I was just like, this is weird. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I just stopped caring, but it is something that is on my list of like great films that I need to watch again.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely watch that again.
Yeah.
It's 100% worth
it. Yeah.
Where did the outline go? There it went. So speaking of movies, Erica and I did the thing that we've been doing for the last couple of years, especially because we couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
We watched a bunch of movies on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
This is a lot of movies.
That's not all of them.
This is a lot of movies already.
We watched 11 altogether.
Like, I sat there and watched all of Cobra Kai on New Year's Day, and I thought that was a lot. And you're watching over the course of 2 days at least, or 11 movies, that is a lot.
Actually, the last one on this list, we actually just watched, this past weekend.
Okay.
But yeah,
New Year's was this past weekend.
No, but like, we watched it on like Sunday.
Okay.
Whereas like, everything else we watched Thursday afternoon and night up until midnight. And
yeah.
Then, basically all day Friday.
Yeah.
Like, we got up like late morning-ish and we just started watching movies and just watched until 8 o'clock or so.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on any one of these.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched the movie Freaky, which is actually pretty much brand new.
That is a movie I really want to watch. It's so dumb, but so awesome.
It's actually a really fun version of like the body swap Freaky Friday sort of deal.
Yeah.
So it's Vince Vaughn is a serial killer. like a fucking crazy one.
Yeah.
And he tries to kill Catherine Newton, who is the girl with the Psyduck from Detective Pikachu.
She is going to be the new Katie Lang.
Right, right. She's Cassie Lang.
Cassie Lang, that's what I mean. Yeah. Where did I get... Oh, because... That's right. I was thinking, because there are images of Haley Steinfeld of Kate Bishop recently released. So I was thinking Kate Bishop when I said that.
But yeah, so Vince Vaughn tries to kill her with, like, basically a magic dagger that he stole after killing a bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it backfires and swaps their bodies. So it's like, it's Vince Vaughn acting like a teenage girl.
Yeah, which is like weird, but at the same time, like, it's Vince Vaughn. Like, he's going to pull it off.
And honestly, like, the girl does a really good job being, like, kind of evil also and menacing also.
Yeah.
And, like, some of the deaths are just fucking brutal.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Ferris Bueller?
I have, yes.
Cameron from Ferris Bueller is in it. He is a really shitty shop teacher that's a complete douchebag. And one of the scenes is they literally get into, like, an all-out brawl. And she ends up killing him. And before he's all the way dead, cuts him in half with the table saw. Like,
jeez.
Like down the middle from, like, head to groin.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was...
That's crazy. But, yeah, that movie looked really good. I want to watch it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching. It's a little expensive right now because it's one of those, like, it's like a $20 rental because it's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we watched Enola Holmes, which is Millie Bobby Brown and, like, Henry Cavill. It's, she plays Enola Holmes, the younger sister of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
She grew up, like, never knowing either of her brothers, really, though. Like, they hadn't seen her since she was, like, a toddler.
Yeah.
And her mother is Helena Bonham Carter.
Okay.
And basically, like, didn't teach her how to be, like, a proper woman of the late 1800s. Like, taught her how to do, like, how to, like, read and have an attitude and fight and stuff like that. And then her mother disappears on her 16th birthday, and she goes to try and find her and sort of gets involved with some other stuff. Meanwhile, her brothers are trying to find her because Mycroft is a huge piece of shit and just wants her to go to, like, a finishing school to become, like, a proper lady.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the one, I can't remember if he said that, Cavill is Sherlock.
Yeah, Henry Cavill is Sherlock.
Yeah.
And, like, he's a fun Sherlock. There's a lawsuit, I believe, against the Netflix for it because he is too nice.
He's too emotional. Yeah, we covered this a while back because they were trying to sue Netflix for it. He's displaying too much emotion because it's not a lawsuit because he's displaying too much emotion, but it is a lawsuit from the estate of the writer of Sherlock Holmes saying that this is cutting the style of Sherlock is cutting too close to the style of nearing the end of the works of Sherlock Holmes where he started to get emotion. So he's displaying too much emotion, and therefore they deserve rights and money for it.
Yeah, it was something stupid like that, and he definitely so he was more emotional than, say, like, the Robert Downey Jr. interpretation was.
Yeah.
But even that interpretation, like, he cared, he just tried not to show it.
Yeah.
And, like, this one, like, also, like, it's not like he was going around being like, I have to help my little sister. It was like, well, you're an enigma, I'd like to find out what's going on. Like, that was really, like, you could tell that was his motivation. He was just kind about it.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't mean to this girl. Like, she's 16.
Yeah.
It was fun, though. Like, definitely worth watching. It's on Netflix. So, if you have Netflix, it's just there. Then we watched Chef, the Jon Favreau movie from, like, 5 or 6 years ago.
How have you not watched that yet?
It's been one of those movies where I keep adding it to, like, watch lists and just never actually sat down to watch it.
It is such a good movie. Like, I've been wanting to watch it again.
The funny thing is, like, I've seen episodes of Chef's Show, but just never this movie. Yeah. And this was such a good movie.
It is. It is, like, so good.
His freak out near the beginning was just amazing. Picking up the lava cake and, like, screaming about it.
Yeah.
He's like, you don't just underbake the cake, you asshole.
Yeah. It is, like, oh, man. I love that show. I love that movie. I love the Chef's Show. Anything he does is just so good.
And, like, that movie had a hell of a cast.
It did. It did.
And, like...
He called upon his Marvel buddies, basically.
I mean, really only two of them.
Yeah.
But, like, he's been making movies long enough and has been in enough movies that, like, he knows people and like he's friends with people. So like it probably wasn't hard for him to like call up Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson and be like, hey, do you guys have like a day to come film a few scenes for a movie?
Yeah, because I think this was also like a lower budget film as well. It's not like an indie film, but it's a, like a lower budget film. And like, yeah, he knows he's got so many ins and outs of the movie industry that it's just, it makes sense for him to be able to make good movies.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it was just, it was really good. Like it was funny. It was heartfelt. Like it was just, it was a really fun movie.
Yeah.
And that one's on, I think it's on Netflix and Amazon. It's on at least one of them. And it's part of like, it's quote unquote free to watch on whichever platform it's on.
Yeah, it makes sense that it's on Netflix because the show's on Netflix.
Yeah, I think we watched it on Amazon though, for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still part of Prime, so if you have Prime, it's on there.
Yeah.
And then, so that's what we watched New Year's Eve. New Year's Day, we watched The Dead Don't Die on HBO.
I remember wanting to see this movie when it came out, just never got to.
It's Bill Murray and Adam Driver, among other people. And it's like a zombie movie where like the dead start coming back to life and killing everybody. It's very self like aware. Like near the end of the movie, like Adam Driver literally goes, well, I got the whole script. And Bill Murray's like, what do you mean you got the whole script? I only got our scenes. And then like name drops the director and says, what an asshole.
I love that stupid, like breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like it wasn't the best movie.
Yeah.
Like other than like a handful of scenes, it wasn't super memorable. But, like, Bill Murray and Adam Driver were both really good in it. Like, I always enjoyed the scenes they were in. It's one of those movies where, like, it was a little too disconnected. There were a few too many moving pieces, and, like, most of it didn't really come together.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's on HBO Max if you want to see, like, more of, like, a comedy horror movie. Like,
yeah.
It's there. Then we watched the movie We Summon the Darkness, which is, like, a thriller-ish movie on Netflix.
Never heard of it.
It's relatively recent. It was, so reading the description for it, it is different than what you would expect. The description basically describes it as like three girls end up like involved in like a satanic like cult or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really what it is. It does put like some spins on things that I didn't expect coming. And it was overall actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
It didn't really have like a super famous cast or anything either, but. Again, it's on Netflix, so if you have Netflix, you don't have to pay extra for it. And it was a fun watch.
Nice.
Then we watched The Circle. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
It's on my watch list. I just haven't watched.
So it's Tom Hanks and Emma Watson and Karen Gillan's in it. Bill Paxton's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's not very good.
No.
No, like, unless you literally have nothing else to do or watch, I'd actually skip it. Emma Watson gets a job at like the big tech company that is kind of a Google stand-in.
Oh, actually, I was thinking of a different movie called The Circle, where it's just called Circle, not The Circle.
Oh, yeah, no. So The Circle is the name of this tech company that kind of does everything the way Google does.
Right, yeah. I remember that movie.
Yeah, and it's basically like a whole, like, Big Brother is watching, but, like, Big Brother isn't also being watched.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the moral of the story. And, like, parts of it are good, but, like, by the time it's over, it's just kind of like, okay, that kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime Video. Like, you don't have to pay extra for it if you have Prime, though.
Yeah.
And then we watched some other stuff, but, like, it's stuff that we've seen, that, like, I've seen already and, like, we've talked about before. And then, like I said, over on Sunday, we watched Knives Out, which we just hadn't sat down and watched yet.
I heard that movie was really good.
That movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, like, it just goes to show that, like, people give Rian Johnson shit constantly for The Last Jedi. And, like, yeah, like, he shouldn't have made a Star Wars movie. But that dude should make his own movies all the time. Because, like, mm-hmm. he really is a good filmmaker.
Yeah.
He just tried to make he tried to be too original with a franchise that people love and wanted to see, like, a different story. But Knives Out was phenomenal. It had a great cast. Daniel Craig as like this like southern detective was amazing. Chris Evans played a complete douchebag in it, which was just unexpected. Like the biggest douchebag.
Yeah.
And it's basically it's a murder mystery, but they tell you at the very beginning who did it.
That's awesome.
Like, and it's not even like one of those like they allude to it and like you don't realize they told you who did it until the end. Like, they literally do a flashback in the first half hour to show you exactly how the person died.
Or a flash forward? Oh, or no. Yeah, I guess it would be. If it's a whodunit, it would be a flashback.
Yeah. So the setup for the movie is this 85-year-old mystery writer is found dead in his study the night after his 85th birthday party.
Yeah.
Where his whole family was there, plus, like, his nurse and his housekeeper and, like, some other, like, staff people.
Yeah.
So he lives on, like, a big estate in, like, Massachusetts, kind of, like, out in, like, the woods. And it's ruled a suicide initially because he's found with the knife in his hand and his throat slashed.
Yeah.
Like, it's just on his bed. Like, there was no signs of struggle or anything like that. And the cops rule it a suicide and all that fun stuff. But then Daniel Craig's detective shows up and he basically says, like, I just got a letter and some money and was told that, like, maybe I should come take a look at this. And yeah, it goes from there. And it was really good.
Nice.
And yeah, like, definitely watch it if you can. It's on Amazon Prime Video if you have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I want to. I know they're making a sequel to it with Daniel Craig's character.
Yeah, so it's not like a sequel. It's more like one of those, like the Murder on the Orient Express, like the Poirot Hercule stuff, the Agatha Christie things.
Yeah. Yeah. But nice.
Yeah. That was probably one of the best movies out of the bunch. And if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
Anyway, you watched your weekly Godzilla movie?
Yes, weekly kaiju film this week was...
If you want to give it a second for all the background noise, we can wait.
Eh, it's done. It is Godzilla vs. Megalon. It was this week. And it was something else. I posted on Facebook when I was watching it, because every time I go to watch them, I'll at least post, like, I'll screen cap it and post on Facebook. For some reason, I don't post it on Instagram, which is weird. But it's just, like, my initial reaction of the first few minutes. And this one I forgot to post until, like, halfway through. And it's straight up the movie of reusing stock footage. And it kind of, like, after having watched them so close back to back to back, it kind of took me out of it a bit. So, like, we talked about last week where Godzilla vs. Gigan had a lot of pre-rendered scenes with the fight against Ghidorah and things like that. In this one, it literally used the same scenes of Godzilla throwing Gigan into a building that was destroyed by Gigan falling into a building in the previous movie.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you look on the wiki for this movie, it credits Rodan and Anguirus, Gigan, Megalon, and Jaguar of being the monsters in this movie. Rodan and Anguirus they're using the same stock footage that they have used for every Godzilla movie since Destroy All Monsters, where they're on Monster Island. And, like, there's smoke coming out of Monster Island, and Rodan falls onto Anguirus, and they get knocked out, because that's what happened in Destroy All Monsters. They have used that scene in every Godzilla movie since that film.
That's actually pretty funny.
And so they used it again in this one. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, why did you even include that? Like, but it was like to show that, like, cause I think if you read the wiki, it says that they get swallowed into the earth. And so they kind of do, like, it is a little edited to where, like, they get swallowed into a hole. So it's to show that the reason Godzilla is the only monster fighting and none of the others is because they've all been swallowed into a hole. And
hey, I'm sorry. I have to interrupt you for a little bit of completely unrelated breaking news. According to the New York Times, Twitter has locked Trump's Twitter account.
There is a god.
The move came after critics and even some allies of companies like Twitter and Facebook said they failed to prevent the misinformation that led to the chaos on Wednesday. Twitter on Wednesday locked the account of President Trump, which prevents him from posting messages to his more than 88 million followers after he published a string of inaccurate and inflammatory tweets on a day of violence in the nation's capital. Twitter said Mr. Trump's account would remain locked for 12 hours and the ban could be extended if several of his tweets that rejected the election results and appeared to incite violence were not deleted. Mr. Trump's account will be permanently suspended if he continues violating Twitter's policies against violent threats and election misinformation, the company added. And their actual tweet was, as a result of unprecedented and ongoing violent situation in Washington, we have required the removal of 3 @RealDonaldTrump tweets that were posted earlier today for repeated and severe violation of our civic integrity policy. And then they followed that tweet up with, this means that the account of @RealDonaldTrump will be locked for 12 hours following the removal of these. If the tweets are not removed, the account will remain locked.
That is amazing. That is beautiful. That is fantastic. I am so happy to hear that. He's finally getting what's coming to him. Like, I really hope, after everything that happened today, because he essentially incited an insurrection, he needs to be arrested and go to jail. As soon as you can't arrest a standing president, but as soon as you're out of presidency, you can be arrested for anything that you did during your presidency.
Yeah, so a lot of people that I saw, I mean, and I apologize for getting so off topic here. A lot of people I saw online were like not just like random like assholes, like actual like political correspondents and people that are smart enough to actually say certain things like this. They were saying like they should move to impeach him immediately. And they should also enact the 25th Amendment to have him declared unfit to the office and let Pence go for the last 20, not even 20 days. What would it be, like 14 days or something like that?
It's 14 days. It's January 20th is Inauguration Day. The one thing that like I thought about last night, it made me laugh, kind of, not really, it made me sad. During the season of Parks and Rec, where Leslie gets recalled, and so everyone on the council is just like, let's table this discussion until Leslie's no longer here. That is more realistic than what actually happened in the United States.
Yep. Yeah.
Trump got recalled, basically. He lost the election. And instead of being like, okay, well, we can't do anything he wants. We should just table whatever he wants to do. Give us a new Supreme Court justice. Let's just rush what he wants to do and give us the new Supreme Court.
Pretty much.
I mean, they did that while before the election, but still. It's just, I'm so happy to hear that his Twitter finally got fucking locked after fucking 4 years.
Yeah, and frankly, if after this, if the particularly the Republicans in the Senate and Congress get their heads out of their asses, they should move for impeachment because his inciting of this put their lives at risk. If they push impeachment through like immediately, even though like all that stuff would probably finalize after inauguration, that would ban him from ever running for any sort of office again.
And that is exactly what needs to happen at this point because of everything he's done, because of the push for like a coup. He straight up pushed for a coup. Like, because of all that, he should never be able to run for office again. And he should, honestly, I don't think he should be given the protection he's going to be given after the presidency anyway. Like,
yeah.
he doesn't deserve it. He's caused nothing but issues, especially over the last year, but like over the last 4 years caused nothing but issues. And like the funny thing is everything Trump has done, Biden is basically undoing his day one. We're rejoining the Paris Climate Accords. We're rejoining something like the WHO. Like everything Trump has done over the past at least 2 years is getting undone because it was all wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, this is only kind of tangentially related, but like, as far as everything went today, right before I came up to start the recording, the news had somebody on, it was a congresswoman from, I think, California, who was basically like talking to them. It's like, yeah, when all of this started, I had to call my husband and had to tell him, like, where he could find my will and all of that stuff because we just didn't know.
Like the crazy thing, and we shouldn't stick with this too long. But the crazy thing is when you have mob boss Chris Christie on ABC News saying, yeah, he's not answering my phone calls and I'm trying to call him to tell them to call them back and to get them to stop. And anyone in his inner circle is not responding. I think there's an issue. If you have the crook Chris Christie telling you you're doing wrong, you're really doing wrong.
I mean, look, his own vice president and Senate majority leader were both opposed to him today. Pence said that he was not going to push to overturn the election the way he wanted, and McConnell said the same thing.
Yeah. It's
like McConnell literally said, if we even attempted this, it would destroy the country.
It would. It would completely diminish the Constitution entirely. Like, this is democracy, that people voted him out, and or people voted Biden in, or maybe they voted him out. Who knows what everyone's voting process was for this election? But he lost. He lost the Pretty majority much. Vote. He lost the electoral vote. There's no doubt about it.
But anyway, go back to talking about Godzilla.
So Godzilla vs. Megalon. Let's see. My issues with it. Number one, a lot of pre-used scenes, like the one I was describing, where like it's literally like in Godzilla vs. Gigan, they were making like a Godzilla-based theme park, and the construction office of the theme park was a very notable-looking building that Gigan gets thrown onto, and the same thing happens in Godzilla vs. Megalon. Like, they brought Gigan in it for no reason. They really didn't need to, but they did, just because I guess they needed, like, a reason for Godzilla and Jet Jaguar to be fighting together. Because this movie was more about Jet Jaguar, the robot, and less about Godzilla. I think it has, it's some of the least amount of screen time, I haven't looked it up, for Godzilla than most of the recent Godzilla films. It had a lot more to do with Jet Jaguar. Okay. This movie was dubbed on HBO. Couldn't watch it subbed. The dubbing was terrible.
I feel like that's most of those movies.
The little boy sounded like a middle-aged woman pretending to be a little boy. It wasn't like Bart Simpson style, like, you know, it's a woman voicing Bart Simpson. It was straight up. It sounded just like they took a middle-aged woman off the street and said, "Pretend to be a little boy." And it was just so bad. I tried to get video of it to send to you guys, but, like, I didn't want to rewind to have to rewatch it. The movie itself was fine. It was good. There was no, like, overarching message that, like, some of the other movies were doing. Except for the fact that, like, part of the movie, like, the start of the movie was like, oh, they started doing underground nuclear weapons testing now. And so it's like, stop with the underground nuclear testing, or maybe we shouldn't have fucking nuclear weapons in general. And the reason Megalon came out from underground is because the people that worship him were praying to him because they also live underground. I don't know. It was just weird and kind of disconnected. And like the human story was silly because it was all about like this underground race of aliens. Like they're Earthlings, but they're aliens because they're not like normal Earthlings. I don't really know what they were. They wanted Jet Jaguar for some reason. No idea why. Jet Jaguar was just this robot that they made, but I think they used it to control Megalon and brought Megalon to attack Tokyo. Like, there was no reason for any of the movie. It's just weird. Like, it was...
Isn't
like,
that a lot of them, though?
No, like, there's generally, like... Maybe, like, Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, there was no reason. Godzilla vs. Kong was all... stupid reasoning, Godzilla vs. Kong straight up has the Raiders of the Lost Ark effect, where like if the humans had not done anything at the beginning of it, it probably still would have ended up being the same. Like I don't know, it's just Kong really didn't need to be in Godzilla vs. Kong, so like there was no rhyme or reason to that. Like some of these like have like legit kind of running stories, but this one just like, in my opinion, made no sense. I didn't Google to see like how people received it, what people thought about it. It was just like I wasn't fully into this one. Like,
do you normally look to see like what the reception's?
After I watch it, I tend to try to see like, well, what did other people think compared to how I? And so like for some of them, especially the ones that I hold in higher regard, I want to know like, am I like an outlier that I like this movie, or like, Did a lot of other people like this movie? Do I have bad taste in Godzilla movies? Something like that. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter to me, but I also just want to know, like, how my rankings compare to other people's rankings, especially if I really like the movie. And, like, maybe I overhyped this movie to myself a little bit because, like,
yeah, because you were real excited for this one because of the dude that looked like Ultraman.
Because of Jet Jaguar, because of this robot. I was really excited, and I saw parts of it when I was younger, and, like, I was super pumped for it. Giant fighting robots. Like, it's everything I love in Power Rangers as well. Like, I was just pumped for it, and then it didn't live up to what I was expecting it to be. plus being dubbed kind of just took it out, took me out of it. But it was, I mean, it was again another middle of the road, but probably lower middle.
Okay. Are you going to do like an official ranking when you're all done?
I mean, I could try. Maybe after these first 15, do an official ranking, and then if I get around to doing the rest of them after, do like a ranking per era. I could try that. I could write that down and figure it out for each era, like my top and my highest and lowest.
Yeah, I'm just curious because, like, you know, like you said a few times that like Godzilla versus King Kong is the worst of the worst.
Yeah, Godzilla versus King Kong is bottom of the barrel. I'd have to relook through the list.
Yeah, let's not get into it now because we do have one more thing to go over.
But my next movie is Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla.
That's the last one, or is there one more?
There's one more, and it's like the Return of Mechagodzilla or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next two movies are Mechagodzilla, and then that's it for the initial era because they're no longer on HBO, and that's when I have to decide if I'm gonna pay to watch them. Which, honestly, if it's like $3 a week, $4 a week, I might just do that. If it's
Actually not bad.
Yeah. If I can buy them each week, if like rental is $3 and buying is $5, I'll probably just buy them so that this way I always have access to them. But yeah, it's Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla next, and I'm kind of excited to watch that one, but I don't want to get overexcited like I was for Jet Jaguar.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, look, the only mecha thing I know is that Naruto versus Mecha Naruto was the worst filler ever.
Oh man, Naruto versus Mecha Naruto, man, that was bad. I remember that one, and they did that several times.
They brought it back
a handful of times.
I think it was all part of like that same like long filler arc.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was bad regardless.
Yeah.
But the last thing we're going to talk about this week, Cobra Kai season 3.
Oh boy, Cobra Kai season 3. We're not going to get into spoilers right away, but we probably will get into spoilers.
Yeah, so we'll say when we're talking spoilers. I mentioned this to you briefly earlier. I want to try and keep this a little more constrained than we normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, and it's neither of our faults, we're both excited to talk about like a movie or a show or something like this, and we'll just jump all over the fucking place.
Yeah.
And there's no real like rhyme or reason to it, and I feel like both of us by the end of it have like missed things that we wanted to mention.
Yeah.
Like I know I have, and I'm sure you have too.
Oh, yeah.
And then have ended up like focusing on something that like maybe didn't need all that much time.
Yeah.
So my thoughts were we would both just give a quick like general thought, non-spoiler. And then we would just again quickly kind of run through the characters.
Yeah.
Man, why are you adding other adults? All the other adults sucked.
I mean, we have some return characters.
I guess that's true. So to be fair, like in that, like some of those return characters, they fit into other character arcs. So I was just that's kind of where I was fitting it.
I mean, just in case we missed any.
But yeah, so I thought we would do like a quick little like thoughts on each of the characters, and then just if we had any other thoughts or like any ideas of what we think we'll see next season.
Yeah, definitely.
So to start out, what like give your general thoughts without spoilers on the season.
So overall, I thought it was slow to start, but picked up pretty decently just under halfway through and got pretty crazy from that point on. I think, and I can't even remember how early on this was because I watched it all at once, from the garage scene on is when it really got to, like, pick up, but, like, it was still slow at some points after that. It was just, but it was good. I really liked it, and I loved the ending.
Yeah, yeah. Did you watch it just back-to-back, like binge it?
Yeah, I turned it on, I sat down and turned it on and just watched it back-to-back-to-back all the way.
So, I watched the first three episodes on Monday, and then the rest of it on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel that it started slow, because, like, I sent you a few messages, like, just after the second episode.
Yeah.
But it was, the only reason I watched it that way is I was busier on Monday with work stuff, so I just couldn't watch more.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday, I didn't really have any work stuff, so I pretty much watched it all day.
Yeah, makes sense.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I liked this season more than last season. It's hard. It's a little harder for me because I don't know if you ended up rewatching it like you said you wanted to.
No, I didn't rewatch it, but I had rewatched it earlier this or earlier within the past since it's come on.
Yeah, so like I haven't watched it since it originally released on YouTube. What was that? Almost 2 years ago now?
A year and a half. Well, no.
It was like spring of 2019.
It had finished filming at the end of 2019. So yeah, a year and a half.
So like I'm kind of just going off of like what I remember and like what they showed in flashbacks of the previous season.
Yeah.
I
feel like it is as good as season one. I wouldn't say it's better than season two, but it does hold the trophy. Like it has a different kind of build up and makes it as good as season one, but not necessarily as good as season two with the outcome, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. So yeah, I get that. Cause yeah, no, I understand that. And like, we'll get into it more with spoilers. The way I was looking at it is I think this one had all of the nostalgia factor that season one had that like you didn't really get as much of that in season two.
Yeah. It also like, and it might just be the way their general plan, but like it had a lot more of the story building and character development than like season two really did. And season two focused a lot more on the kids, whereas this one focused a lot more on the ensemble as a group.
Yeah. And I think they did the villains, quote unquote, antagonists were much more hateable, I feel, this season.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. I feel like last season, in season two, like, the way that it was split between Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do,
yeah,
like, you kind of, like, rooted for and against both sides.
Yeah, yeah. Like both sides had, like, Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do, they both had their redeemable and despicable qualities of themselves. Like Daniel in season two wasn't the best guy. Like, and the Johnny, like, he's working on being a better guy. I'm not trying to, like, give him leeway because he's always been a bad guy and he's trying to be a good guy. But, like there's a lot of, like, miscommunication and lack of communication on all ends on both sides of
yeah, like, that's this whole series.
Like yeah, if somebody
until the
were to
last
just,
episode of this season.
Yeah, if somebody were to just go there and be like, oh, like during season two, if Sam would have just went to Robbie and be like, I was drunk, I kissed Miguel. That all would have been done with. Like like any of the drama between like Sam and Robbie in this season would have been done with. But like there is a portion of that in this season as well, but it's not as strong as it was in the previous season.
Yeah, and all of these kids are just so far up their own asses with everything.
Yeah,
and like but I think overall, like I did really enjoy the season.
Yeah, it was a really good season.
So at this point, if you haven't watched Cobra Kai season 3, or frankly, if you haven't watched season 1 or 2, what are you doing with yourself? It's on Netflix. Go watch it. But stop listening if you don't want spoilers, because we're probably going to talk spoilers for the rest of the show. So we're going to start with Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
So I think obviously, like, his character arc has been the most sort of substantial throughout the thing.
Yeah.
Because he started as just a drunk kind of asshole. And, like, he's still an asshole, and, like, he's still very easily discouraged and dissuaded when things don't go his way.
Yeah.
But by the end of this season, I feel like, and not even by the end, like it was like midway through, like it finally clicked for him, like, no, like the kids actually matter to him. And like, he's going to fuck up. He's going to make mistakes, but like, he's going to keep trying on their behalf.
He's had the best, redemption arc in like a live action series that I've seen him. Like he's like, and even going all the way back to Karate Kid 1, like, He was the bully and the bad kid and the asshole, and like he grew up like always knowing that, but always having money. So like once he had to branch out on his own, he was still a jerk.
Yeah, and he's also kind of an idiot. Like,
yeah,
he just doesn't know how anything works.
No, and it's like it's part of his upbringing, I'm sure, because he didn't have to because he was rich. So like, now that like he's like starting to figure things out and figure out the world and sees how his actions are affecting the world, especially after season two, like he's trying to redeem himself and become the sensei he thought Kreese was,
like sensei, up until like the end, basically.
Like the sensei he thought Kreese was when he was a kid that like he thinks the kids need. and like the icon figure that's somebody to look up to, but also show them like not to be a punk, which is like is kind of a lesson kids need to learn, is to not be a punk, both in the asshole punk and weakling punk kind of
way. Yeah, and like. Yeah, and, like, he still does have, like, an anger management problem and everything, like, all the way through the series. He's super defensive.
Yeah.
But, like, he also had some of the funniest moments. Mm-hmm. Like, when he sneaks into the school to, like, check on Miguel and then, like, talk to, like, the other kids. And, like, he's walking away and, like, there's a kid walking, like, towards him.
Yeah.
And he just swats their notebook out of their hand and then goes, shit, sorry, kid, force a habit. And, like, keeps walking. I'm just like, wow.
Yeah,
or when he eats the sushi and like just stabs it with the fucking chopstick, takes a bite of it in the worst way, and then spits it all out. It's like, yeah, dude, what the fuck?
And then like it also shows like his growth because of like the entire season and the entire last season. Like he's basically still pining over what's her name from the original Karate Kid,
Allie.
And like by the end of his arc, like he talks with her and he actually like learns what it's like to be an adult and a human and realizes like he has something good with Carmen.
Yeah, and like so there was that, so like they had that like little like date day, him and Allie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the night after he was with Miguel's mom, and there's that moment where they almost kiss on the bench. I'm just like, man, don't fuck that up. You like you're finally turning your shit around.
Yeah.
And like it doesn't happen, and then at the end when he said when like he like tells Allie about it, I'm like, okay, cool, like you don't have your head totally up your ass.
Yeah,
and like it, she seemed to be the catalyst, and like we'll talk about Daniel in a minute too, but Allie seemed to be the catalyst of like getting them both to realize that they were both just fucking idiots.
Well, yeah, this is a perfect push into Daniel. Like this entire season for Daniel itself was like him trying to like reconnect with Miyagi and understand that like what he is doing and teaching the kids karate isn't actually wrong, but like he also has other aspects of his life that he has to watch and take care of, i.e. the dealership. That's the word. Dealership.
Because he has a lot of different things going on in this season, like all kind of happening at once.
Yeah.
And like he wasn't really giving any one of them his full attention. Like
no.
He was worried about Robbie. So, like, there was that brief team-up with Johnny where they're trying to find Robbie.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, the whole car dealership thing. And then there's also, like, his kids who, like, he wasn't neglecting his kids, obviously. But, like,
no.
He didn't realize until after he got home from Japan that, like, his daughter basically had, like, PTSD in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she was having panic attacks, not sleeping, like, basically afraid to go to school.
Yeah, and it's, like... I put that on both him and his wife. Like they should have talked to her a little bit more. She also, and I'm sure it's hard to open up about this stuff. She probably should have opened up, but there's a lot of like levels to it. But like, yeah, he wasn't seeing the full picture of everything that was going on, and he like his trip to Japan to help with his dealership really helped him both disconnect and reconnect with everything. And like turned into a goddamn blubbering fool almost in episode 4 when they're reading the letter from Miyagi to her aunt.
Oh yeah, like honestly, that whole like the whole Japan arc, like basically from the time he meets with Kimiko, I think her name is.
I think so, something like that.
Like from the moment that like they start talking again till like basically he gets home. Like that whole arc was very emotional. Like especially like I don't know like what I honestly don't, we probably talked about it before, but I don't remember what like your history is with those movies, but like I've seen Karate Kid 1 and 2 a ton of times. 3 not as many times, but 1 and 2 a bunch. So like all these little like nods to Karate Kid 2 like having like those original actors back for Kimiko and for Chosen, having like especially like Chosen like and we can talk about that more in a minute, but like having those two kind of like reconnect after basically like their parting was as actual enemies. It wasn't like rivals like him and Johnny were.
Chosen straight up threatened to kill Daniel, like
and the girl.
Like it just like for like that whole arc and that whole like basically learning that like Daniel only knows a part of Miyagi-Do karate, and that like maybe and that like where and that opens his mind to like I don't know the full story. And, like, it brings it all together. Like, That's the great thing about the show is like the writing, like in so many different ways, they try to show you like you said with Daniel, like he wasn't seeing the full picture, and then he learned, oh, there's more to Miyake-Do karate than what I was taught.
Yeah. And even like that, the one woman showing up as like the little girl that he saved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like having that play back from the second movie and then be like, yeah, I now run the international market for this company that you're trying to deal with.
Like,
that was super convenient, but also like, okay, cool.
Like, yeah. Like I understood like why they did that. It was super convenient and super like coincidental. But like I understood, like he went there and he said like I'm not coming back without a yes. Like I was hoping he would have done something different with the letters from Miyagi at the company to push them instead of like just this kind of write off of, oh, this person who you probably should have already met at the meeting that you went to where they said no is now going to say yes.
You know what though, if she runs the international branch, she wouldn't necessarily be in that.
Yeah.
Or it's entirely possible that she was in that scene that the camera just never landed on her and they just didn't put two and two together.
Yeah,
or frankly, like Japan is very like formal with that stuff. It may have been one of those things where like only I'm assuming the guy that spoke was the CEO. Only he was at liberty to speak in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was just like his whole arc of like basically learning to see the full picture, which like combined into like the scene with Allie and Johnny at that Christmas party. It was just like it put it all into perspective for the characters, both Johnny and Daniel, and like it's just the writing is so good.
Yeah,
so
good. And I think they actually did a really good job making, because like Daniel has he's kind of been an antagonist through a lot of the show so mm-hmm. far.
Yeah.
And I think they did a good job in this one of A, calling out that like he was also kind of a bully.
Yeah.
But also like he was kind of entitled, and like he still was, like when he was in the dojo with Chosen and just starts snatching at these scrolls and like arguing, he's like, well, I'm a student, why don't I have, well, like I should be able to read this.
Yeah.
And like basically having to like get his ass kicked to like figure out that like everything doesn't revolve around him.
Yeah.
And like him and Johnny just constantly butting heads throughout the season, because like they did, like they met up a lot, and they were always kind of like they were trying to do the same thing, but neither of them were realizing it.
Yeah.
Until Allie's just like, you guys know you're basically the same fucking person.
Yeah. And it's just like it's always like they're two sides of the same coin. Like Daniel has his way of going at things, Johnny has his way, and they can never agree on doing it the same way, but they want the same outcome and they want to do the right thing. It's just they don't agree on how to do it.
Yeah, because like Daniel wants to do everything sort of like by the book and smart, basically, intelligently. And Johnny just kind of wants to like brute force everything.
Yeah.
And like both of those things make sense in certain situations.
Yeah.
They have to find that common middle ground. And it seems like, I mean, obviously the next season they are going to butt heads constantly, but I feel like they're going to find that middle ground when it like actually matters.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how they did at the end of this season, like before the final scene.
Yeah, and it's also, like, I've been talking with other people, and this is going to get super spoily for the very end of the season. Do you think they're going to be able to agree on a name for the new dojo?
I don't think they're going to. I think the kids are going to pick one.
Somebody said to me, Miyagi Kai, which I was like, yeah, absolutely. That's 100%. That's what it should be.
Yeah. I did. So, Eagle Fang Karate is the dumbest fucking name, but also the coolest fucking name that somebody would come up with for something so stupid.
I like when he did Eagle Fang Karate, I'm like, that is absolutely something Johnny would do. That is definitely a Johnny move. But hated every second of it.
But his idea before that of like, well, why don't we just keep it Cobra Kai and we'll just change the C to a K and we'll just be triple K. And Miguel's like, you mean like the KKK?
Yeah.
And Johnny's like, oh yeah, maybe we table that.
Maybe we should stay away from that. Yeah, that was good. Let's move to Kreese, though, because Kreese, he had a significant arc in this season as well.
Yeah, so I thought it was actually kind of interesting that they showed us those like flashbacks to like him as like a late teenager, basically,
mm-hmm.
Like enlisting and fighting in Vietnam and kind of like
yeah,
just the complete shit show he went through in that.
Yeah, the show does a good job at trying to get you to understand and sympathize with both the heroes and the villain. And that's what they were doing with Kreese. It was like, probably a bad life. His mom killed herself, due to, mental health issues. He was essentially forced to join the army, and went to Vietnam, and then...
I don't think he was forced. I think he enlisted.
He did enlist. He wasn't forced, but, like, he was... I can't remember why he was, like, pushed hard to join, but he did. He joined, and he went to Vietnam, and then the love of his life, his teenage sweetheart, died in a car crash.
That was actually pretty sad to hear. Yeah. And, like, I felt bad for him, like, in that part of it. But then, like, him in the 80s and then him in present day, like, he's actually a sociopath now.
Yeah, yeah. It all bleeds in because, like, while he was in Vietnam, he was captive. He was a POW. He was, he was basically forced to kill his commanding officer. But, like, there's a lot going on in his life. And, like, you kind of have to feel for him. But at the same time, like you said, he sucks. He's a fucking asshole sociopath. Like, he is to pull this round full tail, like, he is the Trump of Karate Kid. He is inciting violence, inciting, like...
Yeah, he's using his own history to his benefit, like, at the council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, when he filed the restraining order against, against the LaRussos.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's just looking at, like, well, he's a Vietnam War vet.
Yeah.
Like, he's just trying to help kids, like, learn discipline. Like, yeah, you guys keep attacking him.
He knows what he's doing. He's a smart villain, and that's, like, it's the worst part about him. It's not that he's strong. It's not that he knows karate. It's that he's smart.
Yeah, and he's ruthless. Like, he doesn't actually care what happens to anybody as long as he is seen as the victor. And I mean, like, he was flat out willing to kill. Like, he didn't care that Robbie got hurt at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
He was ready to kill Johnny, though.
Oh, yeah, he would have killed...
Yeah, if Daniel hadn't showed up during that fight, he would have killed Johnny. And frankly, like, I'm a little disappointed at how the fight... Like, obviously, like, Daniel wasn't going to finish Kreese. Like, he wasn't going to take that shot. I'm a little disappointed, though, that it didn't, like... That, honestly, I kind of wish he would have humiliated him by doing a little nose grab.
Yeah, the whole time I was like, he's gonna boop his nose. And he doesn't end up booping his nose.
But, at the same time, like, that really wouldn't fit that scene. Like, it only would have fit that scene because they were doing the cuts between him training with Chosen in Japan, where he taught him those pressure point things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was the only thing. Like Robbie just telling them to stop just didn't quite seem like a satisfying conclusion to that fight, because, like, Kreese deserved it. He deserved to get his ass completely kicked.
I would have to say, just, like, overall, and we can move on to him at this point, like, Robbie's whole arc was just, it was kind of weak.
Yeah, especially, like, I preferred his arc when he was actually, like, locked up in juvenile hall. Yeah,
that was quick. That was really quick.
So so if you think about it, like, this season took place over the course of, like, 5 months.
Yeah.
He was only in for, like, 5 months, but, you know, he probably got out on good behavior because he was doing that, like, community service stuff.
I mean, I wouldn't even say 5 months. I would say, like, 2 to 3.
Well, he got out just before Christmas, basically.
Yeah, Christmas was the last episode, and, like,
I guess he was out, like, two episodes before that.
The first day of school was the end of the last season, and it was 2 weeks later, because Sam was suspended for 2 weeks. So, September to December. So, 4 months, tops.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, like, he was in juvie for 4 months for kicking a kid off a fucking balcony.
So, to be fair, he was in juvie for running after that. He probably wouldn't have been locked up after that, since Miguel did recover and everything like that. Well, and he didn't start the fight. It was self-defense.
Yeah, but, like, giving himself in was supposed to, like, commute a sentence, as well as doing the community service was supposed to make it shorter. But still, like, I would say he was only in jail or in juvie for about 2 to 3 months. I feel like that's way short than what normally happened or what might have happened. But, like, his arc in Juvie, like, I felt like that was going to be him, like, realizing that this was good for him and that he'd go back to Miyagi-Do. And then getting out and then seeing Miguel and Sam together, I thought it was just all weak. Like, he was the worst written of this entire season, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But, like, we can talk about his story a little bit in a few minutes when we get to him. Out of the other adults, was there anything you really wanted to mention?
Johnny's wife is freaking awesome.
Johnny's wife?
Daniel's wife is awesome. She's, like, she's such a strong character when she doesn't even, like, and she's a good actress as well. Like, all flustered when she wasn't able to do the restraining order and everything. Like, I don't know, she's just, like, unfortunately, she's also kind of the epitome of, like, a Karen, because she went to go get a restraining order for somebody she went to go attack.
So, to be fair, like, she wasn't necessarily getting it for her as much as for her family, because this guy was actually, like, he was a legitimate threat.
Oh, yeah,
and, like, he fucking let a cobra loose in their car dealership.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I totally agree, but at the same, I'm still, like, it's a little iffy, but, like, I totally agree, but she's awesome. I also wasn't sure if we were gonna bring up the characters from Karate Kid 2, Kimiko and
I figured we would talk about them during like the Daniel arc, because that's where they made the most impact.
I'm also bummed out we didn't get Chubbs in this season, or whatever his name was, the fat guy who joined Cobra Kai. He worked at the hardware store.
Right. Yeah. Because he was at the fight, and apparently they made a mention of him. He broke parole, and he was apparently he was either locked up or on the run.
Well, no, he because somebody was like, "How could you hire?" And like, he wasn't a hire. He has a restraining order. He's not allowed to come close to any kids.
He had that prior to this.
I don't think he did. I think that was like during. It was mentioned during the season that he can't get any. He can't go near the school and everything like that.
Possible.
So, like, I understand that, like, he was kind of a weird character, but also, like, he was kind of a little bit more relief, because the show can be kind of tense.
And you know what? Like, just to go back, like, Amanda LaRusso, like, she definitely was one of the better adults on the show. Like, she actually, like, she was a little more level-headed about things.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh no, this guy's a psycho, like, we should go to the police, like I kept saying, and then when that didn't work, she's like, well, let's just buy the place out from under him.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just bribe the landlord, pay him off, and get him evicted.
Yeah.
Problem solved. And, like, honestly, like, in a normal world, like, that would be problem solved.
Yeah.
And also, like, her at the city council meeting. Like, when he was talking and, like, she's in the audience, be like, that son of a bitch is full of shit.
Yeah, yeah. She was so good. Let's move forward, because... We've still got a good number of characters to talk about.
Yeah, and just like the only other adult, Miguel's mom, Carmen, I believe her name is.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad that she kind of came around on Johnny. Not just like that, they finally like had like a romantic interaction, but like she obviously did not trust him at the beginning of this season after what happened to Miguel. But like by the end of it, like she saw that like he actually cared about Miguel. Yeah. Like he wasn't doing this just to get Miguel to be able to fight. Like. He was the one telling Miguel, like, you're not allowed to fight. Like, you just learned how to walk again, dude.
Yeah, which like, it shows, like, Johnny's arc and how strong it is, because, like, he has come from just trying to make money by reopening a dojo to actually caring about the kids that he teaches.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like, to hit on Miguel, I liked his arc. I liked seeing him, like, have to kind of, like, fight his way back.
Yeah.
But also, kind of like with Robbie's, like jail sentence, that happened incredibly fast. And I get it, like, they're trying not to, like, move time too much. Because really, like, they have to make, like, since they're setting it up for, like, another, like, All-Valley tournament, like, they can't have it be like, oh yeah, no, like, the All-Valley tournament is, like, next week, it's been a year.
But, honestly, I can see, because Robbie, Miguel was in a coma for 2 weeks at the start of the season, and then wakes up from the coma at the end of the first episode. And then he gets surgery the next episode?
I believe so, yeah.
So, like, I can understand his progression being a little bit faster than Robbie getting out of jail. Because I don't think Robbie even went to juvie until the third episode.
I think it was the third episode, yeah.
Yeah, it was like midway through the third episode was when he was in juvie.
Well, no, so you know what? Whatever episode he was in juvie is the episode that Miguel got the surgery. Because Johnny stayed at the hospital with Miguel's family praying.
Right, yeah.
Instead of going to visit Robbie. And that was like the episode after Robbie went in.
I think so. At the end of the second episode is when he went to juvie, and the third episode was when all of everything else was going through. But like, so in the time that it took Miguel to recover from surgery and learn to walk again, and like, it was probably like six weeks to 2 months,
which so is like, very quickly. But at least they did show that like while he learned to walk again, like. He wasn't able to do other stuff. Like, he didn't have full range of motion. He wasn't able to, like, throw a kick, really.
Yeah.
And, like, frankly, like, he got his ass kicked in that fight at the end.
He got his ass kicked in the fight, but he also was doing some ass kicking in that fight as well.
Only at the very end when, like, he kind of had that, like, moment of, like, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't do any of the crazy shit he was doing in the fight at the end of season two.
No,
like, he was kind of using his body weight to kind of, like, flip the other dude around and then, like, just wail on.
Yeah. And it was, like, that whole final scene was interesting and, like, really cool. Like, at one point they did a full one take of, like, the full process, a full, house. And I was like, holy shit, that's really good.
I don't know if any of that was one take or not. It might have been, though.
Or, no, there were a few parts in that was one take. It was the garage with Johnny and Daniel that there was a one take.
Oh, okay. That actually seems a little more likely.
He had an expedited recovery, but like his recovery is going to take a lot longer than like, and like you said, if they showed it, then when he was training out in the park, like he couldn't kick all the way. He fell. He actually hurt himself falling, I think. And like, it's going to take him longer to retrain his body because his body broke. Whereas his recovery process, although he was able to go from, in a bed to practicing and kind of fighting within 3 months, I think that was like slightly more reasonable than Robbie's very short truncated prison sentence.
Probably. But yeah, like I think he actually had one of the better arcs because like in season two he definitely was turning into one of the assholes.
Yeah,
and in this season, like. After hearing, like, what some of the, like, what his, like, friends had done to, like, the Miyagi students.
Yeah.
He's like, that's not cool, dude. Like, I don't want anything to do with you.
It showed that, like, I think even part of season two, he wasn't really into the whole, like, Cobra Kai becoming the bullies. And, like, once he reconnected with Sam and Dimitri, he was like, okay, yeah, Cobra Kai sucks. And, like, especially with Sensei Kreese there.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, like, this season was very much like it was him kind of the way he was in season one.
Yeah.
Like he was a genuinely, like, good-hearted person.
Yeah.
Now, how about Sam?
Sam, she kind of sucked in the past season, in season two. She got better in this season. I don't know if it's because, like, you watched her deal with her PTSD, or like if just the actual villains got that much worse.
I think of the antagonists were actually that much worse this season.
Yeah, but like she was still like kind of Daniel style a bully, whereas like Daniel was kind of a bully in the original Karate Kid. She was kind of a bully, like she was like pushing like there, but like it would always be retribution. The Cobra Kai would cause something, and she would push to, like, go after
them. Yeah, and it was one of those, like, the Cobra Kai kept getting away with stuff.
Yeah.
And she would want to retaliate, and it would never go well.
Yeah, it would backfire. Like I don't understand how the entire Cobra Kai was able to get out of, like, the soccer match suspension, or Saturday detention. But Sam's group did. Like, I was just like, that's kind of... But, like, it was just, like, it was shown that, like, the world is out to get the rest of these kids, a lot of them whom lost in that fight because they're looking at the Miyagi kids as, like, the bullies now because they did beat the shit out of a lot of these kids.
Yeah, and a lot of those kids were shitty and deserved to get their asses kicked.
Yeah, like, yeah, they did. Hawk definitely deserved to get his ass kicked. And, like, but, like, everyone in school is looking at Hawk as, like, the weird kid again because they found out he wet the bed until he was 14 or whatever, and he got kicked into the trophy case by Dimitri. Like, they're like, it was the dynamic that what's her name, I can't remember, Jasmine, like, she was like, I used to be popular and now I have to rely on you to get even any information, talking to Dimitri. It's like everything changed, and they look at Dimitri and Sam and all of the Miyagi kids as the bullies now because they kind of won the fight, but the fight was started by Tori.
yeah exactly. So we mostly talked about Robbie already, like, we both kind of agreed, like, his arc was pretty bad. The fact that, like, he basically is just blaming everybody else, like, it wasn't what happened wasn't his fault, and, like, rather than accepting that and, like, trying to accept help from people, he's just lashing out at everybody.
It reminds me of, like, I have a half brother that I don't talk about often. He's been in and out of jail his whole life, but he always puts his problems on other people and not, like, that's absolutely what it reminded me. I was like, dude, like, they're doing this for the better. Like, you'll understand. Maybe not now, but when you're older, you'll understand. Which is why I was hoping, like, his arc while in juvie was going to be longer to get him to realize that that was the best thing for him.
Yeah, and, like, him having that, like, that antagonist with, like, that other kid in juvie, like,
yeah,
like, that was like, okay, so, like, they're gonna build this up, and, like, by the end of it, like, they had one last scene where they actually fought, and, like, Robbie got, like, some actual hits in, and then, like, neither of them ratted the other one out, and they kind of, like, had that, like, understanding when they're walking down the hallway, and Robbie's like, why didn't you say anything? And he's just like, I don't rat, and Robbie's like, I don't either.
Yeah,
and, like, the kid just kind of looked at him like, all right, well, like, they're probably not friends, but he's not going to fuck with them anymore.
Like, you could have done juvie. You could have sent him to juvie and just not had him in the show for two episodes, and everything would be the same.
Yeah, because, like, he got out, and he was just mad at everybody and blamed everybody, and it's like, dude, like...
Dude, you ran from the police, you kicked a kid off a balcony. Yes, self-defense, you still kicked a kid off a balcony, and you ran from the police for multiple days. Like, you had prior infractions. Like, you should have just... Like, you kind of caused this to yourself. You did this to yourself.
Yeah, but it's a shame because it wasn't his fault. It was definitely an accident.
Yeah.
Like, he was trying to break up the fight.
Yeah.
But, like, they're all a bunch of stupid fucking children who, like, can't deal with their emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm going to swap these last two real quick. So, how about Tori? Like, she didn't actually have much of an arc. Like, she was only in a handful of episodes.
Yeah, like, they do that thing to try to make you feel for the villain and feel for, like, the antagonists, and they do a good job with this one, with Tori, because, like, she does have some humility, she does have some, like, humanity in her, where, like, she has to take care of her mom, her dying mom on dialysis, as well as her little brother. Like, it makes you feel for her, and she has a shitty landlord. I was like, the entire time that scene was happening, it was just like, ew, this is disgusting. But, like, it doesn't make me hate her any less, though. She still sucks.
Yeah.
It's something I've said in the past. It's something like, just because you have a shitty life, just because you have mental health issues, just because you have problems, doesn't mean you're allowed to be a shitty person. And that's like she has a shitty life, she has a shitty home life, doesn't excuse her crappiness towards other people. And
exactly.
It was she brought a weapon to a fist fight, and then she at least isn't blaming everyone for her problems, but she's still mad at Sam when, like, she doesn't even have a relationship with Miguel anymore. Like,
yeah, and it's a shame because, like, in that first scene, like, that first time you see her when she's, like, at her apartment dealing with all that, it's like, okay, maybe they're gonna make her, like, they're gonna try and redeem her.
Yeah.
And then she just falls back in with Cobra Kai. She has, like, two scenes that don't involve them, the one where she sees Miguel at the restaurant and the one where she sees Robbie at probation.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, maybe they're going to try and make her less shitty. And no, just every time she's with everybody else, she just sucks.
Yeah, and it did. It seemed like, and even some of her reactions with some of the Cobra Kai stuff, like, it made her seem more, like, more relatable and better and nicer. And, like, they were trying to push for that redemption. But yeah, like, she just, she was at the final fight at the LaRusso's, right?
Yeah, because Sam fought in the dojo, and, like, she's the one that picked up a weapon first.
Yeah, so, like, she was there, she was at the final fight, and she's just, like, for no reason. Like, there's literally no reason she should be fighting the rest of these kids. Like,
that whole fight in general, I was gonna save that if for, like, the end, but, like, that whole fight, like, they should have called the cops immediately.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
They assaulted somebody, broke a window in your house, and then actually broke into your house.
Yeah.
Like, don't fight them. Call the police.
But, I mean, at the same time, like, how fast are you going to be able to dial 911 before one of these asshole kids kicks the phone out of your hand?
You know what, though? There were, like, 8 of them. Every one of them has a cell phone. Call 911. Like, yeah, dial it immediately. Be like, these people just broke into my house.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've never been in a situation where somebody has thrown a small kid through a window and then attacked me, so I can't say whether or not I'd be able to call the police that fast. I get what you're saying, but I also, like, fast, especially those trained in self-defense, like, their first reaction would be to defend. I kind of understand why they didn't call the police right away, but the entire time I was like, why doesn't somebody pick up a phone and call the police while this fight is happening?
Yeah,
I'm sure, like, there's...
That's it, exactly.
Like, there's, like, 8 of the good guys and, like, only, like, 6 of the bad guys. A lot of times, like, the bad guys were doubled up. Like, bad guys were fighting. Cobra Kai group was fighting at least 2.
I think there were more Cobra Kais at the beginning than there were Miyagi.
I can't fully remember, but, like, there had to have been some point throughout it. Like, and maybe it's just something that they didn't do. Like, maybe Sam called the cops while she was chasing after Tori, and they just didn't show it.
No, because Sam didn't chase Tori. Sam ran away.
Sam hid
in the dojo. Tori chased her.
But maybe Sam called the cops when she got to the dojo. Like, it might have been something they didn't show. But at the same time, why didn't you call your fucking dad, too? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's... But again, it all happened so fast that you don't... Like, they probably just didn't have a chance to do that, but...
And I am a little disappointed that we didn't actually get to see, like, the, like, outcome of that whole thing, really. Because, like, that fight happened, we see Miguel got home and was fucked up when Johnny goes and knocks on the door after the Christmas party.
Yeah.
And that leads directly into him just fucking kicking in doors at the Cobra Kai dojo.
Yeah,
and then that leads into, to Daniel showing up and saving Johnny.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to see, like, Daniel and Amanda, like, react to, like, coming home to their house destroyed and, like, children injured.
Yeah, that was totally missing from that. Like, I feel like they really needed to have that scene of, like, even if they did a side-by-side, like, dual-screen thing where they both get home at the same time, and Johnny gets home and the LaRussos get home at the same time, and the LaRussos get home to cops at their house in an ambulance, and Johnny gets home to Miguel there, like...
Yeah, like, I know it would have been hard to do for the pacing they had, because that really was a Johnny sees what happened, and then it cuts immediately to him at the dojo, like, ready to just fucking kill Kreese.
Yeah. I'm hopefully, like, they expand on that in the next season. Like, they have that, like, the LaRusso's reaction, or the LaRusso's pulling up to their house.
Yeah, like, maybe we get, like, a flashback or something like that when, like, there'll be a conversation between, like, Daniel and Amanda, like, about what's going on, and, like, they'll show that scene of them getting home after all of that.
Yeah.
But, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, we were on Tori, and basically we both agree. She kind of just sucked. Looked like she was gonna redeem, but sucked.
Yeah. So the last character to talk about is Hawk. I mean, he's a complete piece of shit throughout basically the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And is probably the biggest piece of shit he could be in this season.
Oh, absolutely.
And I, like, he gets, like, quote-unquote redemption at the end. Like,
yeah,
he helps Dimitri, and, like, he rejoins his friends, but, like, I don't think that was earned at all.
No, I don't think... I believe he still had the Mohawk at the end of the season.
He did.
I don't think he deserves to be, like, a leading member in Miyagi Kai right now. Like, I hope the next season builds up his redemption, because he did not, it fit for his character. He lost his popularity, he lost his renown, he lost his sensei's view on him, and he lost his friend.
But that's the thing. So he lost his friends on his own.
Yeah.
Like, rather than letting the one bigger kid still sit at lunch with him, he's like, no, you have to go sit at the loser table because you're a bitch now.
Yeah, he did it all on his own, and he was an asshole. But he I don't know. Like, I liked that they're trying to redeem him at least.
I'm glad they're trying to, but I just don't think he deserved it, because it was just, he was the instigator for basically everything.
He was.
And it was in that one last scene where Dimitri was basically being held back, and they're just like, come on, come get a free shot, that he's like, no, this isn't okay anymore. And it's like, dude, this was you 20 minutes ago. You were the instigator for this. The only reason that you're having second thoughts is because the kids that you didn't like before are now your teammates. Had Kreese not brought in the kids that he was already enemies with, this would have never happened. He'd still be in Kreese's corner.
Yeah, but I also, I don't think things would have progressed to the way they did if Kreese hadn't brought those kids. If the group had stayed the same, I don't think it would have gotten to the point where they had the Christmas Day brawl or the Christmas Eve brawl.
No, I mean, you're right. It's just, honestly, I want him to get his ass kicked. By somebody that he fucked with.
I want, and I this would just be fantastic. I want him to go all season three with this decent arc of trying to do good and doing good and trying to get acceptance from everyone, and Dimitri giving him acceptance but a cold shoulder, and then during the final, during the the semi or quarterfinals, it be Hawk versus Dimitri and Dimitri win. That's what I want.
Something like that would be all right.
Yeah,
because you're at the same school doesn't mean you wouldn't necessarily have to fight each other.
Yeah, if you and somebody from Cobra Kai fight and you win, and then somebody from your dojo and somebody else from Cobra Kai win, and that person wins, and you come up in the bracket, you're gonna have to fight each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It happens. I'm sure it happens all the time in those kinds of things. But it would show that I don't want a Hawk gives up or Hawk tags out. I want a Dimitri and Hawk full on really good fight sequence,
and Hawk loses flat out.
I wouldn't even go for a flat out, but Dimitri just gets the better of him and gets that one extra point to pull the win, and then Dimitri help him up and be now we're even or something like that. Something stupid. But just to edge him out and to be look, you're not as badass as you are. I also want him to get rid of that damn mohawk.
True too.
Don't call him Hawk anymore. He shouldn't be Hawk anymore. Get rid of that character.
Just call him Eli again.
Yeah, that should be his change. He went from being Eli to being Hawk and being the badass, and now he's back to being Eli. He shouldn't be the badass Hawk that he was.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Now, are there any other characters you want to mention anything about?
Only the lack of Sam's old BFF,
they did explain her being gone.
They explained it early and quick for her being gone. I kind of wonder why they didn't bring her back. Probably just couldn't get the contract signed for the season or whatever.
No, I read an article they apparently told her that she just wasn't written into this season, but that doesn't mean that they wouldn't write her into another season.
Okay,
so.
So I mean, it makes sense to easily explain oh, they took her out of this school and brought her to a private school because of what happened. It makes sense.
Honestly, I think it helps by it alienates Sam more because she really doesn't have a close friend at that point to lean on either. It lets that that PTSD and panic attacks and stuff she's having kind of fester even more because she doesn't want to confide in her parents. She doesn't have Miguel or Robbie at that point.
For the start of her time back after her 2-week suspension, she had no friends at school. She had the Miyagi Kai kids, but she didn't really have any friends. You said, by herself. So it did help build that isolation. But she's a nice character, and she's a good actress. So it just kind of missing that little bit for.
Yeah. Anything else you just want to mention, spoiler, about the show?
No, it's just, it was so good. We've been going long on this one. I can't wait to watch it again, which I'll probably do it in a couple of months.
I just hope we don't have to wait that long for season four.
It'll be a year. It'll probably be a year. I think
a year is fine. A year and a half is too much.
I think I read filming is in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Pre-production is completed and filming starts soon, I think.
Okay. Well, that's cool. And I don't know if you actually caught this or not, but like at the end, Kreese calls Terry Silver from Karate Kid 3.
What's that?
At the end, when Kreese is making a phone call, mm-hmm. or near the end, I should say, he's calling his friend Terry Silver, who was one of the antagonists of Karate Kid 3.
I actually never seen Karate Kid 3.
All right. So, you know, at the end of the Vietnam flashbacks, when they're getting rescued from the POW camp,
yeah.
and one of the other soldiers comes out and says, "Man, I owe you my life, forever." That's Terry Silver.
I did not realize that.
So, if I remember correctly from Karate Kid 3, he's rich, also like a martial art artist. Co-founds Cobra Kai with Kreese. And like gives him the dojo because he's rich. Like he doesn't need that. Like he literally like buys it and gives it to him as like a gift. And he's like the CEO of like some like toxic waste company or some shit like that too. So like mm-hmm. he's like the quintessential 80s like douchebag villain.
Yeah.
And he comes to town in Karate Kid 3 basically to help Kreese get revenge on Daniel and Miyagi because like Cobra Kai's done, like, Kreese has no students, like, he's broke and, like, out on the streets and everything. So, like, he's, like, the adult antagonist in Karate Kid 3.
Okay.
And it looks like he is going to be, like, an antagonist in the next season.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Karate Kid 3 is not the most, well, it is not as poorly regarded as the next Karate Kid.
Oh, jeez. That's just bad.
Which I doubt they'll ever bring, like, I can't see them bringing that one up, like, I just don't expect them to get Hilary Swank to show up in these movies or in these shows.
There would be no reason to reference it because it had nothing to do with the original Karate Kids. Just like they can't, it'd be silly for them to reference or call back to Karate Kid with Jaden Smith.
Oh yeah, I mean, well, so that one really wouldn't make sense, but at least the next Karate Kid, like it was still Mr. Miyagi teaching.
Yeah.
Teaching Hilary Swank's character karate.
Yeah.
But it's still one of those things. Like, I don't expect them to ever reference that one. So, like, Karate Kid 3 is probably the last movie that they will reference.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
And that'll probably do it for this week.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you would like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can support us by going to patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, you can head over to your favorite podcast platform and rate us, review us, subscribe to us. All those things matter a whole bunch. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, a whole bunch of places. Our social media, facebook.com/onequestonline or @one_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo. And you can send us emails to social@one-quest.com. Otherwise, we'll be next week with more to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Go tweet at @RealDonaldTrump and just laugh at him. Bye.